So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight. Oh.
Listen to review,
whoa, fuck. Jesus Christ.
Your coffee's right there, man. So.
Oh.
Jesus.
No, that's not good.
The wheel fucking fell off.
This is not good.
Christ.
Yeah, you'll be fine.
Welcome to our state-of-the-art studio, Brad.
Sometimes things are so special in your life that words cannot explain. The history alone in that place makes Madison Square Garden special.
My family's gonna come there. My wife, my mom, my dad, my daughter.
Everything that I've ever wanted out of life comes down to this one day, this one short period of time.
My passion, the thing you dream about and consumes you.
People are gonna remember this forever.
People will say, you know, that match was worth coming back for.
You haven't lived, you haven't breathed until you've danced at WrestleMania.
Tonight will be like no other. Tonight is the showcase of the immortals. They will achieve the impossible and forge new beginnings. Tonight, men will hunt down their dreams. Tonight, no one holds back. And tonight is where it all begins. Again.
Welcome to Review Away. It's John Pollock and Wei Ting. And Wei, we've got a special in-studio guest this week.
Yeah, who are you?
My name's Brad. I am one of John's friends. And I am a former wrestling fan.
A former wrestling fan, everyone. One of my best friends. A guy who I've known for over 10 years. And a man that has traveled not just with me to WrestleMania 20, but both of us, Wei, to WrestleMania 22 in Chicago. We've seen
and
New
18
York and 18.
Toronto.
I've been to 3 WrestleManias with this individual.
Yeah. Well, how did you guys meet?
Well, it was a lonely night in downtown Toronto. How did we? We met at our movie theater job in 2001 when I was hired there. And you'd started, what, just a few months before me, I believe.
Yeah.
Cool. And it was at this job that I kind of didn't know anybody here, and then stumbled upon this group that watched wrestling. And this was kind of the whole connection, I think, of how we all became friends, because I had never known a bunch of people who watched wrestling. I had always just watched it on my own, and suddenly there was another group of people that enjoyed wrestling, and thus our friendship was born.
And what year was this? Around like
2001.
2001. Okay. So, were you a wrestling fan prior to I guess the whole boom period with the Rock and all that?
I was a wrestling fan since little kid, pretty much. You know, watching everyone like Hogan. Obviously, I love guys like Ted DiBiase and Superfly Snuka when I was a kid. And then you know when I was getting older, it turned into the Attitude Era where you got Undertaker and Stone Cold and The Rock getting really big. I watched it obviously all through 2001, 2002. I really enjoyed the Invasion angle. I was a little disappointed with the end of it, but you
know, as were many.
As were many.
Had so much potential at the beginning though.
Sure, and you know what? Looking back on it, I could probably just watch all the clips again on YouTube and enjoy it just as much.
So what is it? What exactly happened that caused you to stop following pro wrestling?
It wasn't anything in particular that made me stop. Like, I know a couple people got really turned off from it based on Oh, they did some... Do you remember the stupid necrophiliac?
Yeah, yeah.
Angle with Katie Vick. Katie Vick, yeah. That turned our friend Dave off from it pretty much completely.
Did he just, like, come in after it, like, on a Tuesday and just be like, I'm done. I'm done with this.
Yeah, Dave was a weird cat, man. He would just get offended, like, personally offended.
Yeah.
Listen, they booked this angle knowing I was watching that night, and how dare they expect my dollars to support this shit? It's like,
Like any wrestling.
Come on. This is a bad angle. Let's move on.
I think what generally happened is I got a job where I had to work Thursday nights, so I was missing SmackDown.
And, oh, right. That's when SmackDown was still on Thursdays.
And I was taping it every week, and then, you know, I'd get to the tape, and, like, when it's on live, like, I'll sit through it, watch it, whatever. Not a big deal. Mm-hmm. When I'm getting through it, like, okay, I'm just going to fast forward to this match. Oh, that doesn't look good. Whatever. This is boring. And then eventually I was just like, okay, I'm just going to watch Raw and SmackDown, you know, whatever. If something good happens, I'll just find it online. And then, I don't know, you just sort of...
Life happened.
Well, it also was, I mean, like... With you, myself, and then we had a whole group who would, like, not just watch, like, you know, Raw every week. I mean, we were watching, like, everything. Like, we would all go to my house. This was, like, when I was finishing high school. We'd watch the NWA TNA pay-per-views back when they were on, like, weekly Wednesdays. And it was kind of when I started with the Law. That's when I wasn't able to watch the pay-per-views anymore with you guys. And then I guess... this WrestleMania would have been, because I started with the Law like around the fall of 2003, and then this show that we're going to talk about was 2004. So I guess was it around that period that you guys started to kind of move on from stuff, maybe?
When?
Like at this time in WrestleMania, were you still watching when this show happened?
I was still watching fairly regularly. I'd still go see all the pay-per-views. I would catch probably 3 out of 4 Raws between them. And maybe one SmackDown, but, you know, and, I mean, the build-up to this WrestleMania was actually really good. I was looking forward to it, and obviously we liked it enough to book a trip to New York, like, purely to go there. After this, I don't want to say it was, like, it wasn't because this WrestleMania that caused me not to watch it anymore, but afterwards,
I find this very curious, because... It was really around that time that I stopped following the product, too. And I just don't know if it's simply because, you know, we're a similar age and maybe we grew up and had real jobs at the same time, or maybe we just grew up and kind of grew out of, you know, this stuff. And it really wasn't
some people just got jobs that revolved around it.
Well, that's what happened to me, too. I mean, and it happened to you, John, but, like, it happened to me as well. I probably wouldn't be following anymore had I not got hooked up with the Law, with the Fight Network, and, you know, it brought me back that way.
Do you not, like, do you think if you didn't get that job, you'd have no interest right now?
I would always have a mild interest. Like, even around the time of this WrestleMania, I watched maybe very casually. Maybe I would catch occasional Raws here and there. I actually had a birthday party for this evening.
Oh, this was on your birthday.
Yeah, this is March 14th. Yeah, my 20th birthday party. Wow. We watched WrestleMania 20, and so I had a bunch of friends over. We bought pizza. And I had a birthday party. So that was a birthday party where, like, you know, I followed the build-up as well. And I invited a bunch of my friends over who, they all used to be wrestling fans. But I would say of the maybe, I don't know, 12 people that came, maybe me and one other guy were the only people that followed it. Otherwise, they were just friends who wanted to come over. So I don't know. Maybe we just grew up. Maybe the product just grew stale.
Sure, it is. If you watch it, like, if you want to watch everything, it's a big time investment. Mm-hmm. You've got, you know, 4 Raws, 4 SmackDowns.
It's crazy. Like, I can tell you by following just wrestling and stuff for our normal, like, work stuff, on top of all the mixed martial arts that's going on, it's nuts. It's insane how much stuff I watch every week. I mean, it's and you're probably the same. Like, I think that also was a big thing for a lot of fans, just WWE fans at the time, where it was, you know, suddenly 4 hours a week between Raw and SmackDown. They were doing more than one pay-per-view a month in some months. it just became really expensive to even follow all of this stuff. And then kind of you get out of the regular viewing of watching pay-per-views. And I think, you know, the UFC's experienced some of that too. There's so much out there that you start to pick and choose and kind of you get out of the rhythm of just catching every show.
You miss one episode, you miss them all.
Right? Yeah. So that is the story of Brad Peck and how he fell out of it as a wrestling fan. How would you categorize following it today? I mean, are you up on any of the stuff right now, or very kind of detached from the wrestling scene? Our fans will not crucify you for saying today's product lacks your interest.
I'm pretty much detached right now. Like, I looked at the roster of current WWE superstars, and I know maybe half of them. And it's probably just a hard thing to get back into once you drop out from it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like, I remember Triple H always holding the title. Maybe that hasn't changed. I don't know.
Well,
it's changed.
It's changed a bit. Still in one of the main events for WrestleMania this weekend, but, you know.
He's got a bigger title now.
He's running the shit in the back instead of just being rumored to be running everything.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So, good for him.
Good for him.
Will you be watching WrestleMania this Sunday?
I will not be watching it this Sunday.
No.
Oh. Will I be watching it afterwards? Possibly.
Oh, I guess.
Why not?
I guess when it comes out on DVD or Blu-ray.
Yes.
Yes. So, Wei, first of all, what did you do for your birthday this year?
This year,
No, 2004.
Oh, 2004.
I don't care about
this year. I told you I had a birthday party.
Well, what'd you do at your birthday party?
We ate pizza.
My friends and I came to my house. I was turning 20 years old, legit, and we had a wrestling party.
Oh, so you watched WrestleMania as part of your party.
Yes.
I see.
Yes.
I was also, had just turned 20, and I can't remember what I did for my birthday that year.
Okay.
But here we go, to New York City, Madison Square Garden, and, me and Brad will be able to add the perspective of our trek to New York City. Did we fly? No. We took the train.
Terrible idea.
Horrible idea.
We should also include there was a third friend, Paul, who came with us.
Yeah, we'll reference Paul probably sporadically. So picture a late 20s Indian gentleman, just for our stories of later, because there's one story where his race will come into this.
Okay.
I don't know if you remember this. But
I sadly do.
Okay, the late 20s Indian named Paul. Yes.
All right, so naturally you would think it would be a good idea to fly down because, you know, New York's not that far. But we're like, no, we're going to take the train, and the train ride is going to be...
I can't even imagine us saving that much because it had to have been, like, how much going on the train? Like...
I wish I could remember. Like, it was a few hundred.
Exactly.
There and back.
To fly, like, round trip, I don't think it would have been that much
more.
Like,
between 250 to 300.
Man, we must have... I don't know why we did this, but it was, like... It was seriously about 12 hours to get there, mainly because we got stopped at the border, and they had to check everyone's passports to get across the border. And they come up to us, and... Myself and Brad, who, if you can tell from Brad's voice, he is a white man like myself. We were kind of, okay, you guys are good. But our friend Paul might as well have had the words terrorist written on his shirt, because this guy was just brutally questioned about his birthplace, where he lives, where he works, who is his employer. I mean, this guy was grilled.
That's awful.
I got maybe three questions. Why are you going to New York? Going to WrestleMania. How long are you there for? We're coming back Monday? Yeah, we're coming back Monday morning. And are you planning on buying anything? Not really. Okay, thanks. And they interrogated him like there was no tomorrow.
I felt guilty for my race during this interrogation.
What made it worse, actually, if you remember, so John and Paul are sitting across the aisle from me. I'm on my own in the two-seater. The guy in front of me, who's probably Middle Eastern of some sort, got removed from the train. Do you remember this?
No.
Okay. The guy sitting right in front of me got removed. And then they came to question us. And, like, this is why we were all like, you know, like, maybe these guys are tight asses. And, like, they asked me three questions. They asked John three questions. And they started interrogating Paul. We're like, I hope he doesn't get taken away.
Mm-hmm.
Probably a good 45 minutes goes by before this guy comes back. And, like, right when he sits down, then the train starts going again. So they clearly took him off to ask him a whole bunch of questions.
I could have sworn there was some incident, maybe it was this guy, where a bunch of people were whispering that, like, they found drugs on someone's bag in, like, another one of the trains. Do you remember this at all?
I don't remember this at all.
I could have sworn someone said that someone's bags got searched and they found, like, drugs on them or something. Mm. Because we were detained at the border for, like, well over an hour.
Yeah.
It was nuts. And then I guess we got there the Friday night? Was it? Or Saturday?
We got there Saturday.
Saturday night. And then...
I will point out, if anybody ever wants to take a train to New York...
Don't.
From Toronto.
From Toronto, take the train that leaves at night. Because we spent most of our waking hours sitting on a train.
It was not a well-thought-out travel.
No,
we left Saturday morning at like 6 a.m. and got maybe a little later than that. We got there like pretty late into the evening, I remember, on Saturday. Like, it was dark out.
Yeah.
Luckily, we were staying at a place right across the street from Madison Square Garden. Somehow, this hotel was like dirt cheap, and it was across the street from Madison Square Garden. I remember being just like, how is this possible that we... are staying at this centrally located...
Well, also when I booked it, I said there was only one person staying, and then three of us split it.
Oh, that is
true. But
we were all working at a movie theater. We were fucking cheap here.
Yeah,
on this
we
trip.
Didn't have a lot of money.
But that would our cheapness would lead into Sunday night and not getting a hotel either.
What?
We did not get a hotel. We got a hotel for one night.
Yeah.
Because our thought process was, well, our train leaves at like 6 a.m. on Sunday morning. The pay-per-view is going to go to, like, close to midnight.
Yeah, okay.
Why would we get a hotel for 6 hours?
Well, that makes sense.
No, it did not make sense at all.
It was bad.
The city that never sleeps, there's an asterisk, except for Sunday night. Everyone goes to sleep, and everything's fucking closed from midnight till 6 a.m.
Saturday night at 2 in the morning, like, there's parents walking their kids around. There's guys drawing, like, caricatures and stuff on the side of the street. There's, like, you know, juggling acts and stuff going on. Everything's open, and then Sunday night, like, it's absolute ghost town.
Had I known more about what was going on, if we had had a car, I definitely would have, because I was actually just looking at this, this was the first year that kind of the WrestleMania weekend, what we see now is, like, there's all the different shows going on, and Wrestle Reunion, and all this stuff. This year was kind of the first year where Ring of Honor scheduled a show nearby for the Saturday night, just, like, 20 minutes outside of New York. So that was going on the Saturday night. But I can't remember. We just kind of... What did we do before WrestleMania? Just kind of walked around the city, checked out stuff?
We went to buy one of our friends an iPod because they had just come out.
That's right. I kind of teased this story last week. Our friend Neil, think a large Portuguese... Well, he's not a large guy anymore. He's actually lost quite a lot of weight. He won't be listening to this. Who cares? He bought us the tickets. He was the one who went on Ticketmaster and got us the tickets.
He's your buddy with the Ticketmaster connections.
Well, he was the one willing to, whatever the on-sale date was, to be there right as tickets went on sale and grab tickets. Because we had agreed we wanted to go to WrestleMania, but I was like 20% sure we'd be able... I thought this thing would sell out in seconds. They had promoted this thing all year long. It was the 20th anniversary of WrestleMania in a small arena. It's not like it was a big stadium or anything. But Neil got tickets, and we agreed that we would go buy him a brand new iPod. And I had no idea what the fuck this was, because it had just come out. I had no idea what an iPod was. But we found it, bought it, and smuggled it back to Canada for him. So that was our big outing.
All right, cool.
And now we go to WrestleMania. Mm-hmm. March the 14th in Madison Square Garden. Do you have any memories, Brad, of walking into Madison Square Garden, other than this thing was on, like, the 7th floor? This was not on, like, the ground. Madison Square Garden is all built weird. It's like you have to go up elevators to the actual arena.
Is there no subway station? Isn't there, like, some type of mall or subway station underneath Madison Square Garden?
It's Penn Station.
Yeah.
That's where our train went to.
Oh, okay.
And that was, like, right across the street from it. But I remember hearing that to set up the whole ring and everything at Madison Square Garden, it's a real pain in the ass because you got to take everything up elevators and then set it up. Why? So the show began with the Boys Choir of Harlem singing the national anthem.
You know what? I rewatched everything that I could find from the show on YouTube.
You couldn't find
this. And I could not find the Boys Choir of Harlem.
Oh, man, that's too bad.
Was your friend Paul singing along to the America the Beautiful?
Was our friend Paul? No, I don't believe he was.
No, probably not.
Not after getting, almost detained
yeah.
on his way in.
Then we get the opening video, and this was a great video here where Vince kind of walks into the shot. They had highlights of prior WrestleManias, and then it cut into like this other video kind of built around all the guys on tonight's WrestleMania, Rock coming back, and then it finished with Vince and Shane together with Shane's newborn son in the shot. And
Declan,
all right. Declan McMahon.
Isn't it creepy that we know the names of their babies?
No, it's common knowledge.
Declan, Aurora. What was the other one?
I don't know. I don't know all their
names. I find it so creepy that we know this.
Well, this was, I guess, another generation of McMahons here. And the tagline, of course, for this year's WrestleMania was, "Where it all begins again."
That is correct.
With the dot, dot, dot.
You know, in this video, for me, it really highlighted the roster for the show and what a strong roster it was. I mean, they had Michaels, they had Hunter, Angle, Foley, Rock, Eddie, Benoit,
Christian,
Flair.
Jericho. I mean, this
Rock.
This was definitely from like 2001 through, I would say, you know, 2005. I mean, the roster, it was just so deep, and yeah. You really see that today as, you know, you just have guys that don't have that experience. They're coming straight up from developmental, and
you got Drew McIntyre with the Slot.
Yes.
Yeah.
Does Drew McIntyre ring a bell to you?
No idea.
If you saw this guy, he would bring you back into it on a weekly basis.
Oh, yeah. No.
He's the next big thing.
A Scottish guy who loses and gets fired once a month on TV.
Nice.
Yeah, it's great.
One thing I will point out while we're on the topic of the roster.
We encourage tangents on this
there
show.
There are a ton of people who wrestled on this show.
Oh, yeah.
They're easily...
Too many, I would say. Like, I think everyone on the roster at least got on camera, even in the back.
I always felt that was a problem with these shows, is that they would just find any excuse to cram anybody, especially with that 2000 edition that we reviewed last week, where every match was a multi-man tag match, except for the
women's match.
And even that had, like, you know, five characters on ringside. But it's just like, it just seems like they want
to... It was at times to like the detriment of the show where it's like, okay, you're not getting just one four-way 12-person tag. You're going to get two of them. We saw 24 people compete for the tag titles between the two shows.
No, that's terrible math.
Sorry, 16. Fuck.
Yeah, there we go. But you got 16 for that. You got, what, 8 cruiserweights going for theirs? Like, yeah. And those matches were 5 minutes long.
Yeah, yeah. That's the biggest detriment, I feel, is that you always hear about time getting cut on WrestleManias, and this is partly the result.
I personally am like, you know what, WrestleMania is the biggest show of the year, and that's not an excuse that just because you're on the roster, you get a spot. It's reserved for the guys that have deserve that WrestleMania spot. Not everyone gets on the show, because it does hurt the show, I think.
Yeah.
And what a show this was. 4.5 hours. I don't know for sure, but I would have to guess this was the longest WrestleMania ever.
It felt like an ROH show.
You left this until the last 24 hours to watch, buddy, and I prayed for you. This took me 5 sittings to get through.
It was a very long show. It wasn't that bad, though.
It wasn't a bad show, but I don't care what you're giving me. 4.5 hours for a wrestling show, that is tough. Mm-hmm. And was there a Sunday Night Heat, do you remember? Did they do Sunday Night Heat before this as well?
Positive. They would have
done
something. They must have. Yeah. So,
I'm trying to think who would have wrestled. I know the only two people I can think of that weren't on the actual card were...
Lance Storm and Val Venus.
The Hurricane.
And they did not wrestle on this, did they?
I just remember them from a little segment with The Rock, where he goes through and he points out Hurricane and Rosie standing in the corner.
Yeah, we had Lance Storm on our show last week, and he was telling us about this event, and this was, he had flown his wife out for this WrestleMania, and the week prior, it had kind of been debated if him and Val Venus would get into one of the tag title matches, and they opted to go with Jindrak and Garrison Cade instead. And shortly afterwards, Lance would transition over to Ohio Valley as a trainer.
Hey, there was no match on this edition of Sunday Night Heat, actually, so...
Hmm. Yeah. So we still
4.5 hours. So
well, so after the video, we kick into the action. Your announcers, Jim Ross and Jerry Lawler on Raw, Michael Cole and Taz on SmackDown, and boy was Jim Ross excited.
Yeah, and so for the both of you, I'm assuming this was perhaps your first time hearing commentary for the show since you both saw it live.
I thought it was interesting.
I can't remember if I ever watched this show afterwards, because I did have it on a DVD, but I don't even know if I watched it or not, but Jim Ross is man, it really stands out with today's product how much that guy has missed.
But even, I would say, more so than Jim Ross, I felt like the MVP, the MVPs on the commentary team were Cole and Taz on this show. Especially compared to, you know, like Michael Cole and even Taz are today right now. I just thought they were so great. This was during a time in SmackDown where really their direction was to just be as straight and as technical as possible in your commentary. And Cole and Taz really did that. I felt the Raw team was... JR was fine, but Lawler was awful. Lawler was just terrible. Just dragging JR down with like a bunch of... there was one part here where Lawler's asking JR about his favorite panty color. What's your favorite color of panties, JR?
Yeah, but in his defense, this is what Lawler always did.
No, he was much better before. Like in the 90s when he was an actual heel, he actually like put a lot of thought into it, and actually his stuff actually helped storylines, but he somewhere along the line degraded into the pervert. You know what I mean?
Fair enough.
I was never a fan of that.
Oh, the old man with the pervert. There's an audience for that.
Sure.
John Cena comes out to start the show. He's wearing a Patrick Ewing jersey and then cuts a rap promo. And, you know, there was obvious here on, at least I was watching the DVD here, so I got to see the cleanup version, but there was an obvious edit somewhere here in the rap that they, I don't know, edited something here while he was rapping. So I don't know what that was. I don't know if there was anything that stood out. What, did you watch a version where... This will clarify. Did your version have the Ultimo Dragon slip?
Oh, yeah.
Because mine did not, and
no,
they
mine didn't.
Edited it seamlessly.
Oh, mine did.
It looked amazing.
Mine did for sure.
Because that's what I was waiting for.
And we'll get to that a bit later on. But I didn't notice anything too crazy. I mean, it was like the usual Cena affair. He made a rhyme... He said, you can't see me, and then he rhymed that with penis with an STD.
Yes, he said that show stuffs his singlet, and he's itching to beat him like a penis with an STD.
Okay, well, I didn't notice anything too offensive or anything worthy of an edit myself, but as far as his rap goes, I did not feel like this was a WrestleMania-caliber rap from John Cena. I've heard better from John Cena.
Listen, the John Cena character, I thought at this time period, it really worked well, but it's one that, to me, just does not hold up over time. I just, I don't know. What were your thoughts, Brad, on... John Cena, the rapper, because I thought at the time I was a big fan of Cena at this point, but I look back and it's like, I don't know how this guy got over.
Well, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, it was Halloween that he started doing the, like, he dressed up as Vanilla Ice and gave a little rap, and then like he started showing up every week in his current gimmick, I guess, or maybe not current at this point anyway, in the 2004 gimmick. I remember he came out when Vince was calling for new talent to have, like, ruthless aggression and stuff.
Yeah.
And, like, he came out and, like, he actually worked a pretty decent match with Jericho and stuff.
Angle was that first appearance, that time limit challenge.
Oh, was it Angle?
Yeah.
No, he worked with Jericho early on, too. I remember those. He worked with Angle and Jericho when he debuted and looked great. And but, I think some of that also was, you know, the guys he was there with as well.
He didn't seem to have any sort of, like, persona, though. Like,
he was the guy with the matching boots and trunks. And, like, remember that? Where every single show he'd have boots and tights that matched, like, the city's team colors.
He was the standard blue chipper character.
He was creator wrestler. That was the first time you and I ever joked about this guy is creator wrestler. That's who he was.
You know what? I was happy when they started giving him the whole rap gimmick because, I mean, it's... You know, it's something that appeals to a lot of different people, and it's something that, I mean, he was pretty good at it, I thought. Like, he performed it really well, so, and it helped him take off. Like, was he the greatest wrestler? Not really, but, I mean, he did a good job, but if he could win everyone with the gimmick, I mean, why not? I thought he did a good job with his rap to start WrestleMania.
And this was John Cena's first WrestleMania match. The year prior, WrestleMania 19, he... He cut a rap on the edition of Heat, I believe. There were rumors that he was going to do something with Jay-Z or Fabulous.
And neither showed up.
They showed up in cardboard form.
Cardboard is form. And then he promised at WrestleMania 19 that he would headline WrestleMania 20. He did not.
He opened WrestleMania 20, but still.
But he would headline the next year. Well, he'd be in one of the big matches the next year.
But still, I mean, this was really the culmination of a fantastic year for John Cena. I mean, he started out as a heel, but transitioned over to babyface, and now he was going for his first major title.
They started the match off. It's a great sign here where Cena got thrown to the floor, and some guy held up a sign that read, "I just escaped Essex County Jail."
I don't get it.
Guy saying he just escaped jail.
Okay.
That's funny.
What's so funny about that?
Two people left. It's a guy. Hey, I escaped. I just broke out of prison.
Yeah, but you probably didn't.
Well, I hope not.
Man, what a...
I'm sorry. That was hilarious. It was very funny.
There were big chants here of "Let's go Cena" as he was selling. He got cut off by a clothesline. Taz compared the pound and ground of both men. Pound and ground.
Well, MMA was not very popular at the time.
Yeah.
Pound and ground.
Wow. We saw a leg drop across the chest of John Cena. It's pretty much here just, you know, the big man and Big Show beating down on Cena.
It's really interesting for me to watch a match like this and hear grown men chant Cena without sucks at the end. They were legit chanting for Cena, and this was
Well, this is when he was really popular.
With the guys, not just the kids. Not even kids.
Finish comes when Cena went to grab his chain, but Jimmy Corderas takes the chain away, turns his back, and then Cena grabs his brass knucks and hits Big Show with the brass knucks. He picks up Big Show for the FU, now known as the Attitude Adjustment for the PG audience, and he pins the Big Show 9 minutes and 12 seconds, and Michael Cole proclaims that Cena's done the impossible, and he has slayed the giant.
Mm. Okay, didn't he pick him up twice?
He did two FUs.
Yeah.
He hit it once, and then Big Show kicked out, and then he hit the brass knucks, and he hit the FU again. What did you think of the match?
I have to think, like, when you go back to watch WrestleMania 3, correct me if I'm wrong, when Hogan picks up Andre the Giant and slams him down, like, at that time, that was just, like, you know, the biggest thing you'd ever seen in wrestling. And now, I mean, like, you know, huge props to Cena for being able to lift Big Show up. Like, he's a big guy. But I don't know. I don't know if they make such a big deal out of it anymore.
They really don't. They really don't. I don't. Was this the first time he lifted Big Show up for an FU?
I've got to think it was, because
what chance
this has been the first time they had worked together, right. I believe. So.
See, like, when Brock lifted Big Show up for an F5, I felt like that was a pretty big deal, because they really revolved that whole match around whether or not Big Brock could do it. Here, it really wasn't an issue. In fact, he did it two times. And I feel like with a lot of Cena's matches, even like, you know, doing it to Mark Henry 2 weeks ago on Raw, they don't really treat it like it's that big of a deal.
No, you go back to like the 80s when Andre was such a unique attraction. And today, I mean, it's just, you've seen so many big guys that they don't really stand out, whether it be a Mark Henry or a Big Show. And you see them every week. It's just, it kind of... You've seen all these guys. It's not that really that uniqueness, and you've seen a lot of big man, you know, power spots already. So,
but I felt like even in a match like this, you could tell Cena was a real major star in the making. I mean, not obviously not the best wrestler, but very much in the same mold of a Hulk Hogan, just you know, utilizing a charisma and the occasional power move to really get the crowd going.
Big Show, I mean, he's a big guy, but like, he can work it pretty well for his size. Like, I thought these two had a pretty decent match, actually.
He was really big at this time.
Yeah, really, he was also also hurting really badly here, because if you remember, at this point, he was supposed to take time off after WrestleMania, and this obviously was Brock Lesnar's last show, and it meant a lot of guys had to like stay on the road, because all of a sudden Lesnar was leaving, and it kind of, they had to fill these cards up with guys. Jonathan Coachman's in the back and runs into Tom Pritchard, who is talking to Johnny the Bull. So, thankfully, Johnny the Bull got onto WrestleMania here.
So, what does that mean? Does that mean he gets a cut of the royalties?
I don't know how that works if you're just in the back. I don't think it works like that.
Hmm.
But he can at least say, "I was on WrestleMania."
Yeah.
Unless you watched on YouTube, and then maybe you didn't see this.
No, I looked for as many like segments and promos and whatnot. I could not find a good version of the Victoria and Molly match. So, I didn't want to watch in 240.
Yeah, no. And that's interesting, too. I mean, I feel like years past, this stuff would have been really easy to find. But I feel like, has the WWE cracked down a lot in recent years on piracy and YouTube and things like that?
I don't know. Like this, again, I had the DVD, so I watched it here, so I didn't really look for it anywhere. But, I mean, for a lot of events, I mean, it's just so much is out there. It's pretty much, you know, fans find stuff fairly easily. We had a spot here then where Teddy Long is also around and talks to Coachman. Coachman then goes into Eric Bischoff's office, and they are with Johnny Spade, the future John Morrison. And Bischoff has heard a rumor that The Undertaker is here. Wow, good. Really ear to the ground here. His big WrestleMania return, and yeah, I've heard The Undertaker is going to be here tonight. And he wants Coach to go find him and recruit The Undertaker to come over to Raw. They did not let Johnny Spade speak at all here.
And what came of this? Like
nothing. There was nothing of the. This was never followed up on. Coach would go down into a basement, and we'd never hear from him again throughout the show. Failure. Randy Orton is with Batista and Ric Flair, and they're all in suits in front of a staircase, and they bring up that this is the same staircase where Orton tossed Mick Foley down the steps back in June of 2003, and then this recapped Foley's return in December, walking away from Randy Orton's challenge. Orton would then spit in Foley's face and talks about how Evolution has passed Mick Foley by, and says that Foley called Hollywood for help. And it started at Madison Square Garden, and tonight, it all begins again tonight. And this whole promo, you had Ric Flair, one of the greatest talkers of all time, not a word, just stood there.
Well, the thing is, like, I really got the sense that through from this and the go-home show last week that this entire push is really a Randy Orton singles push.
Definitely.
And really with Batista and Flair just there kind of as, you know, accessories.
Batista was great. He's wearing this, like, decked-out suit, and his whole role is just looking at the camera, and he had his hand on Randy's shoulder and just mugging to the camera.
Yeah.
I think Batista never really got the praise during this time as just the jacked-up muscle of the group.
Yeah.
Brad was a Batista fan.
Yeah, I liked him. I thought, you know, again, like, you expect when guys are smaller that they're, you know, agile, they can do a lot of stuff, and you expect the big guys to go in and, like, throw punches and the suplex, a powerbomb, whatever. Mm. But, you know, there are a couple of them that I think actually really worked it in there and did a good job.
Well, Batista was in with the right guy. He had some great matches, and you...
Okay, fair enough. He had to be against an opponent who would help him out a bit, because, I mean, he was still new at it, too.
Yeah, for sure. You missed the peak of this guy's character. Like, right before he was about to leave the company in 2010, he turned heel and just played the ultimate, like, douchebag. Like, he'd come out one week with, like,
a
bright pink polo shirt with the
collar
up, glasses, and he was just awesome in this role. He was so great.
He's not there anymore?
No, he got sick of the WWE and left. He's doing a lot of acting now. He's going to be in the next Riddick movie.
He's going to be isn't he going to be in the RZA movie as well?
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. He murdered Ja Rule in a movie too. Wrong Side of Town, which if you're ever drunk, that is a great movie to watch. Wrong Side of Town, starring Batista as Rob Van Dam tries to act as well.
Oh.
Not good. But Batista's great. You're not going to hear any bad out of me from Batista. Then we go to our first of two four-way tag matches featuring 16 different individuals. We had Rob Van Dam and Booker T defending the tag titles against La Resistance, consisting of 20-year-old Rene Dupree.
20?
20 at this time, Way.
He did not look 20.
No.
I don't know any 20-year-olds that look like that.
In steroid years, he looked 30. Yeah. Teaming with Rob Conway, taking on Garrison Cade and Mark Jindrak and the Dudley Boys. And, you know, a lot of people, you can look back at them in their prime. I've got to say, the Dudleys today are, I think, significantly better spots
than agree with you.
They were in 2003.
I absolutely agree with you.
Like, following the whole TLC program, it was like the Dudleys really plateaued in the WWE. Mm-hmm. They have had career revivals in TNA, which is very rare of talent going to TNA and reviving their careers.
And let's clarify, Bully Ray much more so than D-Von.
Sure, yeah.
But I mean, D-Von's performances... All that D-Von's kids bullshit aside, like, I thought D-Von is a good wrestler. He's shown, like,
he's gotten in great shape.
Yeah, gotten in great shape. I think his promos are even good. And Bully Ray has just, you know, done very well for himself. But at this point, they had already tried their singles pushes following the brand extension as, you know, Reverend Devon and then that
with Deacon Batista.
Yeah. And that failed miserably. So then putting back
and we asked Brad why he fell out of it.
So then putting back the Dudleys together at this point, for me, it felt like kind of sad, you know, because it felt like they had tried to do more, but they couldn't, and so they failed. And now let's resort to back to this.
That's the exact same feeling I had when they separated the Hardys after the brand extension, and bringing them back, it's just like it's like breaking up with a girl, and then you guys get back together.
Yes.
It's like, okay, you guys broke up for a reason, and you just haven't found somebody else, so you're going back to something comfortable instead of trying to progress.
If I can give a really corny analogy here, it's like when you get down to that last bit of shampoo and you add a little water to the bottle, you can add it in. It kind of does what it's supposed to, but it's just not the same anymore.
Great. It's That's like brilliant. An ex-girlfriend's shampoo.
You guys are so deep.
Hey, it was this would have been great because Booker T, if you remember, 2 years before this, he was wrestling for Shampoo at WrestleMania with Edge. Do you remember that? For the Shampoo commercial?
I sadly remember that.
Winner gets a Shampoo commercial.
In Japan.
Yes.
Did you guys go to that?
Yeah.
Yeah, you both went.
That was, I think, the peak. We went with, there were eight of us from Silver City that went to WrestleMania.
That's awesome.
And
we actually got eight people for a number of like SmackDowns and Raws as well.
Yeah.
Like we got six to eight people.
We went from eight. I went with seven other people in 2002. I went with then two other people in 2004, two others in 2006. This year I'm going with one person. I sadly feel I will go to a WrestleMania by myself before the end of my life.
2015.
All
you're
alone.
Going alone.
Review Alone by John Pollock as I cry. All right, tag match. Sudden death, first fall to a finish. Van Dam looked rattled here from the pyro. I think he didn't know it was coming. He's usually ready for smoke. And they come out to their WWE Originals theme. This was their idea when they put two guys together. It's like, well, instead of a new theme, let's take elements of both theme songs and put them together.
This was like a mashup.
Yeah, this sucked.
Wait, can I ask a question before we go on? It was Rob Conway and
Rene Dupree.
What happened to Sylvain Grenier?
Sylvain Grenier was deemed not good enough and was kind of just replaced by Conway here, who was the much better worker of the two. And I guess they figured Dupree at this point, they really had high hopes for this guy.
Yeah.
And I think pairing him with Conway, it would kind of excel his learning curve, whereas Grenier, it was like the blind leading the blind with those two. So
Grenier. I don't know. I thought when they started, like, they cut some good promos and they got some really bad heat on them.
They got a lot of heat, especially because they debuted, like, right after the Iraq invasion and everything. So, I mean, it's when it was really, it's when all of the Americans were in favor of that Iraq invasion. Today, they'd probably be baby faces. Man, are you guys wrong?
But I don't know. It came out, like, during this time, they came out with a lot of, like, foreign bad guy kind of things. There was, Hassan?
Yeah. Hassan and Daivari.
The Un-Americans.
Yeah, that's right. The Un-Americans were around in 2002.
Yeah, it was a hot topic.
But this was not a hot match. Van Dam catapults Dupree into a super kick by Booker. La Resistance, they worked over Booker after Dupree blind tags in Cade. Van Dam would get a hot tag, kind of laid out everybody. He goes for a frog splash, but Devon just shoves him to the floor. And the finish comes with Booker going for a scissors kick to Conway. And then Van Dam hits the five-star frog splash. So, and this followed the Dudleys hitting a 3D and then retreating to the floor. So Van Dam got the pin on Conway. 7 minutes and 52 seconds. I mean, not terribly rushed, but I mean, you were dealing with eight bodies in here. And it was just kind of shit in and finish the match.
It felt like a very generic matchup, you know. Just a chance for all guys to kind of tag in and get their one spot and then tag out and finish. You know,
while I was watching, I noticed the first, like, 3 or 4 minutes, like, it was really slow-paced for a match like this. And then I think it was when they tagged in RVD or something. Like, it just became the very quick, like, everyone's showing off, like, one or two moves and then getting knocked out of the ring.
This was I mean, this has only been, well, I guess it had been a few years since Van Dam had debuted. But you just look at him, I mean, just such a throwaway on this show of someone that at one point I think was really could have been something in the company, but this was long after they had kind of squandered that. Jonathan Coachman's in the back, and he's in the bowels of the arena, and hears these strange noises coming from a room, and he discovers it's Gene Okerlund and Bobby Heenan making out with Moolah and Mae Young, and Lawler suggests that maybe they're playing Naked Twister, and Ross says, that's one form of love, and here's another one to segue to the next match with Christian and Jericho, and they... They played a video here, and kind of the whole backstory of this was with Jericho and Christian as heels making the $1 Canadian bet of who could bang Trish or Lita first. And it was Christian eventually tried to move in on Trish as Jericho tried to turn babyface, but Trish learned of the bet. And then finally, Jericho and Trish were on the same page. And I thought throughout this video, Christian was just awesome throughout this whole storyline of just this prick friend.
You're a big fan of Christian. They called you Captain Charisma Jr. Were you...
I hated that nickname on the show.
Oh, but, did you?
Nonetheless, it was a former executive here who gave everyone nicknames, and that's what I was saddled with.
Oh, okay. But were you a big fan of him as a result?
I thought
of
he was
feud?
Great at this time, and I thought this feud with Jericho and Christian was one of the better ones. I mean, this would last well after WrestleMania. I mean, they got like 6 months out of the whole Christian, Trish, Jericho storyline. I remember it being one of the highlights of that year in terms of great matches and a great storyline.
From the whole, I don't know, the Dudleys, the Hardys, and Edge and Christian, like, this is the one tag team that they actually split up, which I think worked in favor for both of them. I mean, they were great tag team wrestlers, but, like, everyone saw Edge clearly was... Everyone thought, at least, he would be the, like, number one guy. I thought Christian was always significantly better. He was so good on the mic.
I would say at this point, too, I mean, Christian had kind of... There was kind of that goofy period where they kind of always gave him all this stupid comedy stuff, but especially during this program, I mean, Edge was injured at this point and was out, and this is when, to me, Christian really elevated himself into, instead of being kind of like comedy mid-card, it's like, you could do a lot with this guy at this point, and I think that's when everyone realized, you know, it's not going to be a case of one guy being Sean and one being Marty Jannetty. It was these two were both. I think you could do a lot with both.
Not both Sean, but not Marty's.
No. I think a happy medium there. Yeah. Christian and Chris Jericho. They explained Tim White here was returning as the referee. I think this was his first match back since Hell in a Cell in 2002, where he messed up his shoulder really badly. And here he was back in the ring.
Alive.
With Jericho, who was in that Hell in a Cell match with Triple H. Jericho comes out of the gate here. They kind of attack each other at the start of the match. These guys got a lot of time in this match. I think it really helped. Like, this was a match that maybe could have been rushed, but they seemed to get a lot of time here, which was very good. Jericho teased the walls early on, but Christian made it to the ropes. We saw Jericho throughout go for the walls of Jericho in the early part. There was a roll-up reversal. Christian ended up kicking out. They fought to the top rope where Christian dropped Jericho on his front and then was selling his left knee, and that would lead to Christian applying the Texas Cloverleaf. He would work over the knee. Towards the finish, Trish Stratus ran down as Christian hits the implant DDT, only gets a two count. The crowd was definitely popping for the near fall there. And then Christian pulls Trish in, shoves her to the mat, and then Jericho goes to check on Trish and ends up taking a back elbow from Trish, who didn't see Jericho there, and Christian rolls him up for the pin. They went 14 minutes and 44 seconds, and then Trish is all distraught about her mistake and tries to hold Jericho back from attacking Christian, and then as Jericho turns around to face Trish, Trish just slaps the piss out of Jericho here, turning on him. Then Christian hits the unprettier. They go up the ramp, and Christian and Trish make out in front of Chris Jericho.
What was your live reaction to seeing this, the two of you?
I think at that point, Trish, like, she had kind of become boring as, like, you know, the good girl. And when she did that, like, I was watching it again, and, like, it didn't seem like the crowd reacted that much, but, like, it was really loud in there. Like, everyone was shocked by it. I was shocked by it, too, because, well, I mean, they didn't really build it up to, like, her looking like she was going to do that.
This was also the first time you saw the finish of a Chris Jericho match at a WrestleMania. So you missed it at WrestleMania 18. You did not see...
Oh, you're right. Total side note here. WrestleMania 18. I don't know how long the show was. It was very long as well.
Sure.
Hey, I didn't go to the washroom the entire show. And then right at the end, Triple H, Chris Jericho, they're going. I'm like, I swear, like, I've got to go now. I ran up the stairs. I got to the washroom. I rushed halfway through peeing. I hear Triple H's theme start playing.
Oh, man.
And I was so disappointed. And I heard a guy from the couple stalls down from me just start screaming, no!
Oh, great story.
They're long shows. You gotta. That's why they have women's matches.
That's terrible.
Oh,
and,
come on. That's
and
what
factual.
We call
you gotta have those buffer matches in there. Yeah,
exactly.
You need
so this is a note to anyone who goes to wrestling shows.
Pace yourself.
Yeah.
Don't wait
just
till the
go early.
Event.
Go in the middle. Just. Don't save it for the end. Mm.
Well, you got to see Hogan rock. That would have
fair
been,
enough.
Been worse to miss that, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
I thought this match was a good match with a well-executed finish. But to me, I'm never a fan of when they do swerves like this, featuring in the build-up the people that end up partnering together, attacking each other.
Yeah,
just
I know
like
what you mean.
When Christian, I mean, on Raw, Christian was beating the shit out of Trish, and you're telling me Trish let this guy beat her up.
Well, they tried to piece that together after, where when Christian like grabbed her by the hair to kiss her, and in the TV after this, they played up how Trish likes it rough. She likes to be abused, I guess,
okay.
Is what they were subtly telling you there.
All right, okay.
They have a violent relationship. And if you remember, like, Christian and Trish, they were paired, like, for a few weeks, and then that was it. There was no connection between the two, really, afterwards. Mm. It was right back to Christian and Jericho, and they'd feud for a few more months. But this began, to me, the best run of Trish's career. Mm. When she was the heel throughout 2004, she was awesome. Just fantastic. It was the best work she ever did, I thought, as
cool.
A heel. So that finishes up that. Lillian Garcia is with Mick Foley in the back, talking about his first match in 4 years.
His first match since the one we reviewed 2 weeks ago.
Yes, if you want to dare go into our archives, you can find that show. And The Rock walks in, basically takes over the interview from Mick Foley here, takes the camera away, shows the Hurricane and Rosie, who he identifies as Grimace and the Hamburglar, and then we see Jimmy Snuka and Don Morocco, and then they take the camera out to show the audience and does his catchphrases, and it's your Rock Foley promo.
As I said last week, I was not a fan of this version of The Rock. I personally found him just too spastic and too he just rambles, but it served its purpose. It certainly got the crowd going.
Those are The Rock's promos. He talked for a long
not,
periods
not
of time.
If you compare him to how he is today. You know, like if you compare this to a promo on, you know, maybe 3 weeks ago or 2 weeks ago on Raw, he's much more controlled, much more, you know, not just kind of going out there and just screaming.
Maybe, I don't know. I had nothing there. We go to our next match.
It's a very tiny room and we're all a little low on oxygen, I suppose.
It's cozy in here.
Yeah.
The beautiful Review Away Studios here. What do you think, Brad, of our setup here?
It's definitely a small room.
Before our channel moved into this office, do you know what this room was?
It was a closet.
It was where they put what their cleaning equipment.
I think it was a closet.
Yeah.
I think you're right.
Oh. Yeah.
This was a closet. Before this was a window. It was like some type of closet.
I can see just like racks of coats being put in here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like a
small how many people have
room.
You had at maximum in here?
Four.
Yeah.
That's about it. Yeah. That's when you start to smell sweat.
That's when you start to get lightheaded.
Yeah.
Due to the lack.
We're moving to a much nicer studio.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Well, we have a few matches left, so let's hurry before we all get lightheaded.
Oh, we've got tons to go here. Yeah. We're now going to chat. Randy Orton, Ric Flair, and Batista against The Rock and Mick Foley. Believe it or not, based on some of the bumps this guy took, Ric Flair was working with a broken neck at the time.
I can't believe
and
that.
And was numb in, like, three of his fingers.
Wow. During this match itself?
Correct.
And how was he after this match?
I would guess not as good as he was before he decided to take a back body drop on the floor.
That's insane. Yeah.
Well,
that's
Ric Flair's insane.
It's either highly exaggerated, the extent of his injuries, or it's just insane.
No, I totally believe it with Ric Flair. Like, the guy is nuts.
Wow. He took a couple of them off the top rope as well.
He's still working
today. Out of curiosity, what does he do when he's up there? Like, does he hit that move ever?
Never. That's the joke. That's a running gag. Like, when Flair climbs the top rope and
he
gets tossed
I think
off.
He hit it once, and it was like a big pop when he finally hit it. But
okay, because that's what I was wondering. Like, yeah. I think it'd be great to see him actually hit it. Ever.
That should be like the streak, like the Undertaker streak. Yeah. Should never hit it.
Yeah. crowd goes nuts here for The Rock. This was his first match in a year since the Goldberg Classic at Backlash 2003. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was...
And his last match since Survivor Series of the last year.
That's true. He would not wrestle again until November of 2011 after this match. Rock and Flair are in, which was a spectacle in and of itself. Rock does the Ric Flair strut. Rock hits a back body drop to Flair in the ring and then on the floor. I have a feeling that Rock probably had no idea what this guy was going through and just suggested this. And Flair was like, hell yeah. Yeah, just kill me. Orton gets tagged in and Foley wants in. And then Orton goes to the floor not wanting any part of Foley. Evolution then got heat on the Rock, pulling down the rope and sending him to the floor. Foley hit Batista with a series of punches and his running knee. Crowd was just into everybody here. Batista at one point mounted Foley with his ground and pound, but Foley comes back with the mandible claw to stop him, and then Orton breaks it. Eventually they make the hot tag to Rock. Rock hits a flying forearm to Flair, then a DDT to Orton, and then flips Batista into the ring. Flair, they end up, Batista puts Rock down with a spine buster, and Flair goes for the people's elbow, but Rock does a kip up, knocks him down, and then gives the people's elbow to Flair for a two count while mocking the strut. And then Flair pulls Rock out after a rock bottom to Orton. We see a Batista bomb to Rock, and then Orton climbs on top, gets a two count, and finish comes with Foley coming in. He gets Socko out for Orton, but Orton counters Socko by hitting the RKO and gets the pin on Foley. 17 minutes and 2 seconds. And after the match, Rock and Foley would remain in the ring, and the crowd would chant Foley. And then this would build up to a singles match the next month with Mick Foley and Randy Orton in one of Mick Foley and Randy Orton's best matches of their careers at Backlash the following month. So I like this finish a lot. It put a lot of emphasis on Randy Orton as kind of your next star, and I thought it was a really good use of Mick Foley.
Yeah, I thought Foley's facials upon getting pinned were just fantastic. Him sitting in the ring there, like the look really told the entire story. I thought it was a very good match, and especially highlighted by The Rock. The Rock just looked fantastic. For a guy who hadn't wrestled in a whole year, he was in fantastic shape, and it was definitely the workhorse of his team. Even at this point, I felt Foley was quite limited in the ring.
He just had great timing. Crowd was into everybody here in this match. I mean, even for Batista's limited spots, he was protected really well. It showcased Orton. Flair got his stuff in there. It's just came across very well, I thought. Your thoughts, Brad?
I remember the Backlash match was like, that was one of the top matches that year.
This
match was pretty good. I enjoyed it, and I remembered a lot of it when watching it again, but it really made me think, like, I'm probably gonna go and watch that backlash match again, because this built up to that amazingly.
Yeah,
like,
it was
like
perfect.
Foley looked good in this, like,
but it wasn't at the level what Backlash was.
But
I mean,
like, this built him up as like, and like, this kind of made like Orton, you know, like, bam, I pinned Foley, I'm the Legend Killer. I think that's the gimmick he was going with at the time.
Yep.
And like, it, this match, like, it was good, but it also set up for like great stuff in the future.
Yeah, I think Mick Foley, I think in one interview, he talked about how he wasn't blown away by his performance on this show, but kind of, I think, even motivated him more for the Backlash performance. Like, in this, Foley was definitely somewhat hidden in this match because you had so many bodies out there. You had Rock, who was, you know, so much focus was on him that it wasn't solely on Foley. But I love the Foley-Orton program. I thought it did so much for Orton. Foley was someone who wasn't really selfish when it came to booking or having, you know, a kind of ego about things. It was just, let's try and get Randy Orton over.
Was this Orton's first WrestleMania?
Yes. Yeah. And this year he is wrestling Kane. It's about as excited as we are. Randy Orton and Kane.
Cool.
Yep. Highlights of the Hall of Fame ceremony aired with all the inductees brought out by Mean Gene Okerlund. They were Bobby Heenan, Tito Santana, Big John Studd's son, Harley Race, Pete Rose, Don Morocco, Greg Valentine, Jesse Ventura, Junkyard Dog's daughter, superstar Billy Graham, and Sergeant Slaughter.
I think the Hall of Fame, this was the first return of the Hall of
Yes.
Fame, correct, in maybe like over a decade. I just feel like the Hall of Fame has been a great addition to Mania every single year. It's very nice that they devote the time in the weekend and also the time on this on every WrestleMania to give the spotlight to these guys.
To me, going to the Hall of Fame was, especially when we all went in 2006, I enjoyed the Hall of Fame that year more than I did WrestleMania, the one with Brett going mm-hmm. in and mm-hmm. Eddie. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I guess you guys maybe didn't see this, but next we had there was a new John Cena DVD coming out, and the 30-second spot was a rap by John Cena rapping about buying his new DVD.
I missed that.
Worth checking out. Then we go to the Playboy evening gown match with Sable and Tori Wilson taking on Stacy Keibler and Miss Jackie Gaeta. Star of the...
Is she Miss Jackie?
That's what they called her on this.
Oh, okay. Because I thought Jacqueline was Miss Jackie.
Yeah, I guess she's the new Miss Jackie. Okay. Miss Haas now.
Yeah.
Sable gets on the microphone and says that, well, we feel a little restricted in these evening gowns, and we would like to start the match without our evening gowns on, which I can relate to. It's very taxing to have to wrestle with an evening gown on. My only question is, why did they even bother promoting this as an evening gown match? If this was going to be your hot chicks match, why don't you just say, they're going to wrestle nearly naked? Why don't you promote it as such?
Good question. They wanted a surprise, maybe. Who knows? Maybe if you promoted it as a bra and panties match, they would have felt too confined in that as well.
Was anyone really surprised that they got stripped out of their evening gowns?
I
remember Miss Jackie was like, I don't want any part of this, and then the other ones all stripped her down.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's classy.
They all, come on. When right. one woman gets naked, they all want to get naked.
It's a mob mentality.
Yeah.
Taz and Cole were just ridiculous here, as in, like, they had never seen women before in bras. And we actually had this exchange between Taz and Michael Cole with... Michael Cole saying, you just stabbed me with your pencil.
Oh,
that's not my pencil.
Very classy. Well,
this is where Brad gets up and leaves.
Can you imagine, how are you supposed to call this match? Can you imagine like a Gordon Solie calling the
I actually
Playboy
enjoyed when Jim Ross was put in these situations and he would just, you know, a Briscoe Funk classic, this is not, and just like ridiculously over the top.
I like when he tried
commentary.
To like call the moves that they're botching.
Yeah. Oh, when Booker would do like a spin-a-rooney and Ross would joke about, I tried that the other day in my backyard. It's like Ross would never make himself look silly. He'd just be so, this is stupid. I know. You're in on the joke.
And he would actually try a spin-a-rooney years later.
Oh, God. Yeah.
On live TV.
Unfortunately, or fortunately, Brad, you have not had to witness the, whenever Jim Ross is brought back now, and it's simply just to embarrass the guy on TV. We've seen him do spin-a-roonies. We've seen barbecue sauce dumped on him.
We've seen him
have to do a rap contest where he fucks up the words on live TV.
Which I enjoyed, but John didn't.
No,
he's
a comedy figure in today's WWE.
When did he leave? Like, when was he officially...
Yeah, it was like over 2 years ago. He got... was it Bell's palsy he got again? Or was it... It might have been another health issue he had, and he was taken off TV for a few months, and then Vince just decided he didn't want to bring him back. He wants Michael Cole to be their main guy. So he's come back for little sporadic returns.
So
but
is it Cole and Lawler?
It's Cole and Lawler on Raw, and then Cole, Josh Matthews, and Booker T on SmackDown. You haven't lived till you've heard Booker T on commentary.
I'm just surprised Josh Matthews was still there. Like
he's been one of the longest tenured employees in that company.
Yeah.
I guess all the announcers have been there around a long time now. Cole's been there since 97.
Yeah, yeah.
Lawler's been there, you know.
Is Lillian Garcia still there?
She left for a while, and now she's back.
Let's fully update Brad on every person on the roster.
You should just throw out the show. Just ask us random questions about today, and you'd be amazed at where people have ended up.
Because I just like seeing your facial reaction to hearing about some of these things.
If we start these Where Are They Now, we're guaranteed one where the answer will be dead. And you'll be like, oh.
I actually, when I was watching the match, the tag match we've already gone through, Garrison Kidd. The one we haven't gone to yet.
Garrison Cade.
We just did it. That's how memorable it was.
Lance Cade.
Yeah. There are 8 tag teams that went into these matches. I don't remember who.
Feels like there's 24 guys in those matches. Uh-huh. Yeah, Cade has passed away, and he's certainly not the only one on this show who is
died. We'll probably get to that later.
Awkward. Okay, we continue here with this classic. Torrey with a cross body off the top. I'm still going to describe this as a real match. Keebler comes in with a cartwheel. And then they do the fish out of water spot, popularized in ECW here. This was like watching Lance Storm and Jerry Lynn here with the holds and counters and back to their feet.
They've done this quite often, these
with the
two.
Women.
Yeah.
Keebler had hit this weird wheel kick to the head, shades of Edson Barbosa way. Mm-hmm. Torrey and Gata would unroll all over the referee, series of roll-ups and a reversal by Torrey, where she pins Gata and then pulls Gata's underwear down and smacks her in the ass. And Stacy gets upset at Jackie after the match. Jackie leaves without Stacy, where everyone was so excited. We're going to get a Stacy Keebler, Jackie Gata feud after this. And Taz calls this his favorite match of the night. 2 minutes and 34 seconds. It's hard to complain.
No.
You need matches like this on a long show.
Absolutely. And I think these matches definitely have their place on a card like
this. If anything,
this.
I think this was too early in the card. Put this between two big matches or something as a chance
right
for Brad
after,
to pee.
This was after the handicap match, though.
Yeah, that's true. And I guess we were like an hour or so into this. So.
I can't remember.
But I think a lot of us, especially, I guess, more internet wrestling fans, we often make the mistake of taking these matches too seriously, and this is really nothing more than a chance to... They're like the cheerleaders during halftime, during a football game. You know, and they're fun. It's just eye candy to get the crowd excited.
They interview fans from across the world who came to New York, and they interview one old man who says that his skin is tingling. It's tingling. He's having a medical reaction to WrestleMania. Eddie Guerrero walks in past Paul London, Terry, Stevie Richards, Billy Gunn. This was Billy Gunn's role at WrestleMania, saying hi to the champion. He passes by Spike Dudley, Orlando Jordan, and then into the locker room of Chris Benoit. And Benoit is pacing, getting focused. And Eddie says, no matter what happens tonight, he's proud of Chris. And Benoit says, don't talk to me like that, as if I'm going to lose. And Eddie says, come on, no one actually believes you're going to win. And Benoit yells that I believe in myself. And Eddie says this was his whole plan to get Benoit fired up. And this is the Benoit he saw in Japan. And it was all mind games by Eddie.
Yeah.
Benoit was just, this was not his strength, was opening his mouth.
It wasn't. And that's always been his Achilles heel in his entire career, is his personality. But you can tell that throughout this push, they worked really hard on trying to improve that. And Benoit himself looked to work really hard to get his personality out and to get that fire out of him. And I think, considering what this guy used to sound like, they did a good job. I mean, he's not The Rock, but it was a big improvement on how he used to be.
Still, for my money, the best Benoit promo I ever saw was on SmackDown 1 week. And I think I've talked about this before, where Eddie Guerrero comes in and Benoit's just fuming. And Eddie was like, what's up? And he starts off just all joking. Benoit doesn't say a word for the entire promo. And by the end of it, Eddie is just freaking out. Like he's gone from just joking around to just pissed at Benoit. And it was just awesome. It was just Benoit just like seething here in the locker room. It was awesome.
Oh, so you never knew...
Well, Benoit never said a thing, but it was the best promo ever. It got across more than any of his other promos. So then we go to the Cruiserweight Open for the Cruiserweight title. And as I mentioned, seamless editing here of Ultimo Dragon. He had talked about when he was signed, his goal was to... His two goals when he came to the WWE were to participate in a WrestleMania and to perform at Madison Square Garden. And here he gets to do both in one night. And here this poor guy comes out and nearly kills himself slipping at the entrance on his, what was his cape or on the ground part, because I didn't get to see it.
His music hit and he just came bursting out of the entrance, almost did like almost like a Michael Jackson slide, but almost fell on his face. Oh, okay. And that wasn't it. He walks down the ring, climbs up to the second rope to do his pose, nearly trips on the second rope.
I mean, oh wow!
I don't know what.
None of this made the DVD, which tells me they at least had the care in the editing department to worry about Ultimo Dragon.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So
there you go.
Yeah, this guy. I was so excited when this guy was coming into the WWE, and he really didn't do much. Didn't last very long. But
no.
Hey,
you know, like on now that I think back to that run, like his matches were very underwhelming. And
well, they signed him thinking they were getting another Rey Mysterio, yeah. And that wasn't Ultimo Dragon's style. Mm-hmm. He was not a big high flyer, but he was a tremendous worker when he was in there with certain guys. I mean, some might think the guy was a bit overrated just because of the quality of guys he had when he worked in Japan and other places. But I was always a big fan of his. And this, I think, Brad, adds to our point about so many people being crammed in, because instead of like a good 10-minute match, we got like 8 like fucking TV matches here. Like just crazy rushed.
Yeah. Somebody came in, Funaki maybe, and literally walked into the ring, got rolled up, and was done.
Oh, that was funny.
Someone got missed it in the face and couldn't participate.
Akio. Jimmy Akio. Yang, who you were a big fan of, Way.
Yeah, I used to be.
Yeah.
Jimmy Yang, I remember we watched him on TNA.
Yeah,
and
that's right.
He was
right.
Amazing.
And he was part of the Flying Elvises.
Yeah.
Yep. Here he was, his big break on Madison Square Garden at WrestleMania. Well, these are all real quick. Start with Ultimo Dragon and Shannon Moore, where Moore missed a corkscrew moonsault, and Ultimo just kicked him in the gut and hit his finish. A minute 18. Then Jamie Noble came in, submitted Ultimo with a guillotine, which the announcers didn't even know what that was. Then we got Jamie Noble and Funaki that Brad mentioned. It was pretty much Funaki with a top rope crossbody, which was reversed. Like, what a dork. Just in and out. And then they play up that it was the fastest finish in WrestleMania history. So, congratulations.
Maybe
to
in wrestling history, when you think about it.
It was a quick one.
I don't know. There was the Bushwhacker elimination from the Royal Rumble.
Yeah, we're talking about a pinfall, though.
Oh, fair enough.
Jamie Noble then faced Nunzio. These two, they were cousins when they were brought into the WWE or some sort. They were related, and they just dropped that.
Oh, really?
Remember, it was Jamie Noble got these messages about his evil cousin that was coming.
Oh, yeah.
His evil cousin Nunzio. And then
yeah,
one's Italian and one's a redneck, and they went their separate ways.
Family relations are pretty customizable.
They were a little strained.
Yeah.
Nunzio hit a drop kick off the turnbuckle, but Noble got his foot on the rope, and then Noble sent Nunzio to the floor. Noble then hit a somersault dive to the floor, and then Noble pulls the leg out of Nunzio, so he gets counted out. This was like one of my like bullshit tactics I used to win matches in like WCW NWO World Tour, where I would just hit a guy at 9 so I would get the count out and race into the ring. This was a finish. We continue onwards with Jamie Noble and Billy Kidman. And
this one I remembered when I was watching it again, because
the big spot.
I remember Nunzio was just like, we could see it pretty well from where we were sitting. Like, Madison Square Garden's great seating no matter where you are. But I remember him, like you can see the height on Kidman's shooting star.
Yes. This is where Nunzio pulled out Noble and then took a baseball slide from Kidman. And this is where Kidman climbs to the top ropes and does a shooting star press to the floor. Now, the issue here is that I am almost certain he never probably did this in WWE. This was a spot he would do in WCW a lot, to the floor at least.
Uh-huh.
In WWE, they've got ropes, mm-hmm. as opposed to cables in WCW. And you could see that these ropes didn't have a lot of give to them.
Yeah.
And it was like he barely got any height. And if you watch the replay here, when he landed, his skull crashed into Nunzio's.
Yeah.
This looked sick. If you see this replay, I guarantee you Nunzio was knocked out.
Mm-hmm.
This looked so painful.
Yeah. I felt bad for all the men involved.
Oh, my God. Crowd went nuts, though, for this move. Got a holy shit chant. But holy Christ, these two, I don't know how they were alive. Noble then applies his guillotine back in the ring. it's broken up in the corner, and it leads to Billy Kidman hitting his BK bomb off the corners, the Burger King bomb at 6:07 of the overall match. Horrible name for a sit-out power bomb.
It never got over.
The BK bomb, the McRib.
I'm sorry, like, a guy named Billy Kidman, like, he's never going to get big.
Do you know what he...
Oh, come on. Like, in WCW, he was there.
Wrong company, though. WWE didn't...
Yeah.
This, like, guy just never got anywhere here.
You'll never get, like, superstar status with a name that, like, it's hard to say the name seriously.
He's a kid, and he's a man.
He's a kid becoming a man. He's like Boys to Men, the wrestling version. He is now the guy in the back who times the matches and keeps everyone... He's one of the producers in the back now.
Oh, really?
He's a
just man, Billy Man.
And Tori Wilson has divorced him and is now dating Alex Rodriguez, the baseball player.
Oh, that's...
There we go. Bad. So both have moved upwards.
Bad for Billy Kidman, I guess.
Yep. Kidman and Rey Mysterio was the next match. I know everyone would be like, oh, wow, big pairing here. They got 90 seconds together here at WrestleMania. Rey hit his... the kind of sunset flip out of the corner. What'd they call this? The infrared? I can't remember. This was the code red. This was one of Amazing Red's many maneuvers that Ray had was using at this point. Pinned Kidman. Then we get Rey Mysterio and Tajiri. I know everyone's excited. Oh, wow, Rey and Tajiri. They got a minute 10. Yeah. Tajiri applied the tarantula. Rey drop-kicked Tajiri, who was going for a springboard off the ropes, and hit the 619, but then he can't hit the springboard leg drop. Tajiri goes for the mist, misses Rey, but takes out Akio, his henchman, with the mist, and then Rey pins Tajiri. And then they announce, well, Akio can't compete because he's been blinded by the mist. Horrible. Poor guy here. They don't even have enough time to do, like, a 10-second finish. For the guy.
Throw him in and pin him.
Yeah, he eliminated via blindness. Wow. And it comes down to Rey against Cruiserweight champion Chavo Guerrero. And Tajiri kicks Rey right after the match. So Chavo goes for the near fall, can't pin him. Rey hits a springboard Hurricanrana and then knocks Chavo Classic to the floor. And then hits a dive to the floor onto Chavo Sr. And Mysterio then goes for a sunset flip, but Chavo sits down, grabs Senior's hands on the ropes for leverage, and pins Rey to keep the title. So, just extremely rushed. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would have just preferred, you know, pick two or three guys, do a singles match or a three-way, and give them the full 10 minutes here, rather than racing through all these. Like, we didn't need to see half these guys do short matches.
All the pins happening within, you know, 30 seconds to a minute were very hard to believe in and hard to take seriously, because it would never happen in a
It kills your division. Like, why would I want to go see a match with these two guys on a pay-per-view if the last time they fought, it lasted
30 minutes.
45 seconds.
Exactly. Everything just felt incredibly rushed. There, you know, as you mentioned, we had between, 10 seconds to a minute and a half at the most for some of these guys. So it was very hard to get
into. Eight matches in 10 and a half minutes. So just way too fast. Then we go to the video setting up Lesnar and Goldberg. And this video, to me, this was one of the themes throughout this show, Wayne. I don't know if you noticed this, seeing all the video previews, was that after watching this show, it was like you really got the sense that, like, so many of these angles used the Royal Rumble as a real big kind of springboard for the event. It was like Royal Rumble felt like an important show just watching this and how much stuff was set up. There was this. There was Benoit winning. There was Hunter and Michaels going to the draw. Mm-hmm. It was like this year, I mean, Royal Rumble set up nothing for WrestleMania this year.
Hmm.
I mean, Royal Rumble to me was, this was the first year Royal Rumble felt like a skippable show.
Yeah. Come to think of it,
and that really hit me on this show, was just how much they referenced the Royal Rumble and how it set stuff up. Like Benoit, for instance, they knew going back to, like, the fall that this was going to be Benoit winning the title. They knew it, like, 6-7 months out.
Wow.
Whereas today, it's... Well, we shouldn't say that. They had quite a lot planned out this year as well. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, typically, you watch the Royal Rumble, there was really nothing set up this year.
Yeah.
At least as far as the Goldberg-Lesnar feud was concerned, they found an opportunity to do that at the Rumble because it was one of the few shows where the two brands would interconnect.
Yes.
You don't really have that anymore because every show features both brands.
Now, let's explain the backstory here because it would be hard to go through this match without explaining the circumstances around this match here. Prior to this, Brock Lesnar had let the WWE know that he wanted out of his contract. He still had a number of years left on it, and this was going to be his final show. And for Bill Goldberg, he had signed a one-year contract, so his contract expired like a week or two after this event. So it was both guys' last match with the company. Goldberg, they knew ahead of time, was done. But Lesnar, he was positioned to be one of the top heels on SmackDown moving forward after this. So it threw a huge problem into the plans on SmackDown. It's what led to JBL being repackaged because they needed a new heel. But word had gotten out about this. And whatever percentage of the crowd that was aware of this, it felt like everybody knew here because the crowd was the complete story of this god-awful match.
Absolutely. I think...
And Steve Austin was the ref.
And I think something like this was really... I guess it tells you just how fast rumors travel these days because... Lesnar, did they even know on that go-home Raw that he was going to leave?
I think it was... Lesnar's always said that months before this, he had mentioned that he was getting sick of the schedule, but it wasn't until the Tuesday before this show that he officially gave his notice.
Yes, and...
5 days.
And you would never be able to tell that they didn't reference this on TV at all, because upon this match, it felt like everybody had heard about this and had heard it and had it drilled into their minds, like, you know, months ahead.
So... they get into the ring. They start off. Well, no, they did not start off. They stood in the ring. Massive chance of "You sold out" directed at Lesnar, which was comical because this guy was leaving the company and guaranteed he had at this point $1 million downside, and he was leaving for pretty much a hope of making a squad in the NFL, and he would actually have significant money issues after this time. So he was doing anything but selling out at this point.
He was actually selling out by staying.
So anyway, they stagger around. The crowd starts singing goodbye to both of them. They're doing nothing in the ring. Yeah. They're doing nothing, which to me, it only encouraged the chance even more. Like these guys, it had the feeling of like, we don't even want to work here.
And I never understood that. Why...
Come out of the gate hot and just give the crowd something else to focus on.
But see, like, I mean, they obviously did this intentionally. And why would they? Why would they decide to book a match that was intentionally this inactive, this bad?
I think it was two guys who were either thrown by the crowd or I don't know what, if they were just... I don't know, but these guys showed that they were not able to work on the fly here, and I could only imagine what Austin was thinking here. It's like, guys, what the fuck is going on here? It was like over 2 minutes of just standing here. Mm-hmm. Then it culminated with a chant of, "This match sucks." Yeah. This crowd, this was all I remember live of this, was the crowd for this match. And it was funny because after it, I was like, the crowd was just so hot that I can't say this was a horrible experience live because
it was
the crowd,
amazing.
This might have been the hottest they were all night outside of like the main event finish. But going back and watching this, this was fucking painful to watch. I hated this match.
Being there live, like, this was absolutely deafening, the crowd. Like, everybody wanted to yell at these guys. And you know what? Honestly, if this match took place, like, I mean, now we have... And, like, back in 2004, like, we have the benefit of being able to read, like, wrestling news and stuff. You know, like, when I was growing up, like, when you watch on TV or you watch pay-per-views, like, you didn't have that advantage. You didn't know what was going on behind the scenes. And it really changes a lot of things because this match could have been great if nobody knew that this was going to happen. I know they added Austin pretty late into it, and I believe, at least.
Yeah, I don't know what the exact time
I think they added him pretty late, and... Like, thank God they did. Otherwise, like,
he was the only guy the crowd was into here.
I don't even know what they would have done without him in there.
Yeah, and when this match was first announced, I mean, Goldberg, let's be honest, not the greatest worker in the world. Lesnar was fantastic at this point. And Goldberg, when he had the right guy, like, I always remember this WCW match he had with Scott Steiner, which on paper you thought would be terrible. They were great. So I was optimistic. This match would be more than fine. And it just seemed like both guys, it was simply, let's just get through this. There seemed to be no motivation to do much here.
But it didn't seem that way, because it seemed like they were stalling and stalling for some particular reason.
They did like the grapple, and then like, oh,
they did
nobody
the long collar and elbow spot, which just didn't get over.
They did the running and pushing of each other, and then nobody can like knock the other one over.
Do you think that was supposed to get over? Them doing the collar and elbow tie up for 2 minutes.
Well, it was certainly like a planned spot.
It just felt like this match was planned to fail.
Well, it certainly achieved that. Goldberg sucks chance. Lesnar here at one point went for this sloppy standing arm triangle, which at least against Shane Carwin he would learn the proper technique of. We saw a judo toss to Lesnar. Crowd only got into Goldberg when Goldberg did his power spots. That was the brief time when the crowd got into him. To me, that would be like a giant hammer hitting me in the head. Okay, this is the way this match should probably go. Do some fucking power spots here. They did not. Where did this lead to? Both guys got near falls, and each got up and got into Steve Austin's face, kind of telegraphing what was going to happen after. Goldberg turns around and Lesnar hits an F5, and this is when Goldberg kicks out. Sorry, that's when Lesnar got upset at Austin. Lesnar then runs shoulder first into the corner. Goldberg spears him and hits the jackhammer and gets the win. This one went 96 minutes and 42 seconds, and that's what it felt like. And then afterwards, the crowd is just singing goodbye. Lesnar gives the finger to the crowd. Austin then gets the finger from Lesnar as well. Lesnar gets stunned. He drinks beer with Goldberg, stuns Goldberg. Crowd pops for that as they boo Goldberg out of the WWE. And that was that. This was horrendous. Just a horrible, horrible WrestleMania memory for me.
Uh-huh.
Other than the crowd was like, fuck it, we're going to entertain ourselves here.
Totally.
You know, but in the end, it was a memorable match. Yeah. It was memorable because it's, you know, you expect a lot of matches, like the women's match we talked about, like you expect it to be crap. The cruiserweights, you know that they're not going to have, you know, 10 minutes each. They're going to have 2 minutes. You expect it to be crap. This could have been probably not a highlight. The rest of the card was actually pretty good.
This was a huge, like you could argue
this was built like immensely. And this was a match that I think a lot of people were looking forward to. And
for some, I'm sure this is the reason they bought WrestleMania. This was a dream match at the time, you know, Lesnar and Goldberg. It was huge. And what a fucking letdown.
Yeah.
But in the end, like, it's memorable, sadly, for the wrong reasons. But
for me, it's one of those matches that are memorable for the real life circumstances surrounding it, and also memorable because of the crowd reaction. I found it really interesting just to hear JR and King try to call this match, because at the beginning of it, they didn't even want to acknowledge the rumors that Lesnar was leaving, because it had never been brought up on TV before. But eventually, it just became to the point where they couldn't not mention it. I found it so lame when King tries to make an excuse for the two never doing anything to each other by saying that, oh, you know, when you have two guys so evenly matched, it's hard for one to dominate the other.
Well, in fairness, I guarantee you they were probably being at least at the start of the match to ignore the crowd, and it got to a point where they had to acknowledge it. So what are you going to do when that's your mandate in your ear?
Well, then my blame then doesn't necessarily go to them, but it carries over to whoever is giving that mandate, most likely Vince.
All right, let's move on from that. There was the rumor, and it's never been officially, you know, confirmed or not, that Shane McMahon was in the crowd chanting with everyone, "You sold out at Lesnar." So I don't know if that was true or not, but that was the discussion afterwards. They had a big pyro display outside of Madison Square Garden, and then they announced WrestleMania 21 for the next year in LA. And then Howard Finkel welcomes out Vince McMahon, who comes out, does a total babyface promo, thanking the audience, and he was a heel at this point.
He probably felt like the crowd needed something to Yeah. I don't know, to turn them back.
Thank
around.
You, and we're sorry.
Yeah.
Still a lot of show left. And, ooh, this was how you rebound. Another four-way tag title match, this time for the SmackDown titles, with your champions Rikishi and Scotty Too Hotty against the world's greatest tag team, the APA, and the Basham Brothers. Remember them.
Doug and Danny. Yeah.
The Bashams. Scotty tries to skin the cat early on, but is held onto the ropes, and Benjamin hits a jumping backbreaker. The Bashams worked over Scotty in their corner and finally made a tag to Rikishi, but very little reaction here as Rikishi attacks everybody, hits a DDT to Danny. Benjamin tries a German suplex to Rikishi. He failed, gets hit with Rikishi's ass, and then Haas comes down in the corner. Haas takes the stink face, which they proclaim is a WrestleMania tradition of a man getting assed in the face. Bradshaw hits a fallaway slam to Doug, sending him to the floor, and then hits the clothesline from hell to Danny. Rikishi comes into the ring, hits a Samoan drop to Bradshaw, and then Danny is just laying there from the clothesline from hell, and Rikishi just plops down and sits on Danny for the win. 6 minutes, and Rikishi and Scotty keep the tag titles.
Another real nothing match. Just too many guys in there. No drama to it at all. It definitely felt rushed, and they didn't even have time to do the worm.
Oh.
But you got it at the end, after the match.
I glossed over that. Yeah. Yeah. Another eight bodies who...
I think it's funny. There's eight tag teams going into these two matches, and not one... the titles don't change hands either time.
I'm fine with that, because these matches were so trivial that the title change would have been trivial as well. Mm-hmm. No one would have remembered this afterwards.
How big were the world's greatest tag team at this point? Was it still pretty new?
They had been around.
They were with Team Angle, and
they had been around for over a year at this point.
Yeah.
And okay, this was actually they were about to break these two up at the draft, like a week or two later. So this was actually right at the end of their run together as a team.
Because I liked them as a team.
I thought they were great as a team, but then they wanted to break them up.
I guess it makes sense why they didn't give them the belts.
Yeah, and just a few months after this, Bradshaw would be your WWE champion.
I liked his JBL thing.
He was great as that character.
Another conversation.
They air a promo for Edge's return. He got injured at such a bad time. It was like a month before WrestleMania 19, and he didn't miss one but two WrestleManias. Just terrible timing to his neck injury, missing both. And then, of course, he'd never fully recover from that neck surgery, and that's why he can't wrestle anymore now. Howard Finkel welcomes Jesse Ventura down. This was great. We don't have time for this, but we've got time for Jesse Ventura to come and interview Donald Trump to discuss WrestleMania, running shows back in 1988 and 1989, and to get Donald Trump to verbally agree to back him if he were to get back into politics, and ends it with, maybe the White House needs a wrestler in 2008, to which I said, they didn't, and they did not pursue this.
Yeah. What is there to say?
When I interviewed Jesse Ventura, his publicist told me, Jesse's on hold right now. Please do not call him Mr. Ventura or Jesse. And I was like, what am I supposed to call him? Please call him Governor. I was like, but he's not the governor anymore. He's always referred to as Governor. I'm like, oh, I didn't know that worked for governors. Is that all forms of office you still have to refer to people as?
Not that I know of.
Yeah. Let's call him Dude. Hey. Jesse Ventura did not run for president in 2008, so this was really a waste of 5 goddamn minutes on this pay-per-view.
It's just a show. They have celebrities that care about their show.
So then they explain the stipulations of the next match. It is title versus hair. If ever there was a stipulation match that didn't need explaining, I think title versus hair is it.
Pretty self-explanatory. Yeah.
Victoria, the champion, i.e. the title, versus Molly with her hair. Lawler asks if this would be the first time that Molly has ever been shaved if she loses.
That's a good question. We don't know. We don't know if she had like a sort of a punk.
I don't think, knowing Jerry Lawler, that he was referring to...
Her armpits.
Oh, I just got that.
Oh.
Yeah.
Disgusting.
Victoria goes for a roll-up. Molly kicks out, goes to the floor. See a sit-out drop kick by Molly as she gets to heat. I thought both here were working very hard here. Crowd just wasn't really into the match. Mm-hmm. There was a power slam by Victoria for a two count. She goes for a superplex, but then Molly lands on her feet and goes for a sunset flip. Nearly messed it up, but like recovered in mid-move and got a near fall out of it. And then the finish, it looked like Molly was going for the Widow's Peak, Victoria's move, and instead Victoria countered it with her backslide and pinned Molly 4 minutes and 54 seconds. And then Molly tried to run away and escape to the back, and Victoria attacks her at the entrance, Molly does attack Victoria, tries to shave her head, but the clippers or the razor doesn't work, and she gets sprayed in the eyes with hairspray, and they tie Molly onto the chair and shaves her head as fans chant mullet at Molly.
She almost did have a mullet for a few seconds there, at least. I find hair cutting stipulations, I think they're a good draw. I think they're, well, provided that they're the right people. I mean, we saw like Vince versus
and they go Trump through with the stipulation.
Yeah, that was great. The match was just like it just nobody cared about this match whatsoever.
No.
And when they did get to the hair cutting, it was a real spectacle. But they're always a little awkward because it takes so long to do. It's not just like a momentary thing.
Sure.
Boom, you're bald. Like, it takes a long time, and you get to see the awkwardness of the mullet and all that. So,
Remember it was an NWA TNA show where the Sinister Minister had to shave Raven's head?
Oh, and he was like cutting into
him? He was scalping him.
Yeah.
It was one of the most violent things I've seen on a wrestling show.
Very fitting for the Sinister Minister.
Oh, he was covered in blood, and it was just disgusting to watch. So it's like, you know, like the heel has to be like flailing away to try and avoid the haircut, but at the same time, it's like, Christ, this is my scalp here that they are shaving with a legit razor. Yeah. If I was in this situation, I would be asked to be just hit me and I'll sell that I'm out cold and you can shave my head without any interference from me. Mm. But they go to a video package for the Kurt Angle Eddie Guerrero match. Kurt Angle turning heel by attacking Eddie and running Eddie down for being a drug addict, which, believe me, in 2012, quite the irony. Angle criticizing the moral fiber of the country for getting behind Eddie, who's not a good representation and will bring shame to the company. And they there's a big beatdown angle with Eddie Guerrero handcuffed, done to this like opera style music way. Very very dramatic.
I really like this.
It was good. I thought so too.
The editing is good as always in these packages.
And they come back after the video and they show Molly skin bald here with the gasp from the crowd looking at Molly, who is completely bald. So, hey, to their credit, they advertised the stip and they delivered on the stip. Mm-hmm. I mean, so many times it's like, oh, they get a little haircut or something like that. They went full out here.
I'd say they usually, you know, they usually deliver. The WWE, at least. I mean, we saw it with Angle. We saw it with Punk.
I was at the Fight Pro Wrestling show on Sunday, and they did a beard versus beard match.
Oh, really?
And at the end of it, Cody Deaner, to the other wrestler, Scotty Turner, he's like, I don't have the heart to shave another man's beard, fellow beard owner. Wow. And they agreed, let's be a tag team.
Oh, that's lame.
So, but this crowd, they were chanting beard throughout everything, and then for every move, they would make it a beard sound. It was like you go for a DDT, they're like, beard DDT, beard suplex, beard slam. And it was just everything was beard puns. It was an entertaining crowd.
Those beards are over, especially in that venue.
It's amazing, though, that like Molly will go on and get her head shaved. Like a woman will get her head shaved, and this guy won't get his beard shaved.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay. It's a little disappointing.
Hold on a second. A big difference between a Madison Square Garden show and the Transact holding 20 people.
It was more than 20. Come on,
40 then even. But no, I agree. Like if you bill a stip, you should deliver.
Sure.
Even on an indie show.
Absolutely. I agree.
Beards grow back.
So does hair. So Molly,
take a lot longer to grow back for hair, for a woman.
Oh, so we go into our WWE title match, which was on the SmackDown brand at the time. Eddie Guerrero defending against Kurt Angle. This was just a month after Eddie Guerrero had won the title from Brock Lesnar at the No Way Out show. And a slow start here, with kind of a wrestling match. They exchange shoulder blocks, and then Angle retreats to the floor. Angle would kind of just, he'd be controlling Eddie Guerrero. He had like a headlock underhook combination here. And it was, this was really built up way, like kind of like your classic, like All Japan heavyweight exactly. match where yep. it was really, really slow at the beginning. And then they just up the intensity, work into their finishes mm-hmm. and kind of build for the big reaction. And that's kind of exactly how this went. Angle hit a pair of belly to belly suplexes and then, a bear hug as he wore down Guerrero, repeatedly doing this. He'd hit a German suplex, but Eddie countered on the second one, got a roll up. There was a tilt-a-whirl head scissors by Eddie, and then the three amigos to Angle, who countered into the ankle lock, and then a kick out by Eddie. Angle then tosses Eddie over the top rope. There's a kick out. Angle gets the straps down, and this is the first time he goes for the ankle lock. But Guerrero turns it into a cover. He takes another German. Guerrero then counters the angle slam into a tornado DDT and hits the frog splash. Angle kicks out at two, and the crowd goes nuts here. They totally bought this as the finish. Angle is then playing possum, goes for the ankle lock again. Guerrero counters and sends Angle to the floor. And this is where he undoes his left boot, and Angle gets up. They go to this close-up of Eddie Guerrero staring at Angle, where you hear him mouth the words, "Oh, shit," at Kurt Angle recovering. And Angle runs in at him and goes for the ankle lock. Eddie kicks out of his boot and rolls away. So Angle has his boot in his hands, runs at Eddie, who applies a small package and ties his feet up into the ropes. And Eddie pins Angle 21-34. And I remember watching this live that I was kind of underwhelmed by this match, but watching this back, I enjoyed this match quite a lot, actually, on the second time watching this in however many years.
I really enjoyed this match. I thought, especially that finish, I mean, a picture-perfect small package on a charging Kurt Angle, resulting in Eddie being in perfect position of the ropes so that he not only cheats by, you know, untying his boot and going through that whole thing, but being able to grab the ropes with his ankles and cheating doubly for that finish. I thought for the story they wanted to tell, this was a perfectly technically executed matchup. And Angle, really, it's amazing to compare him from this show and then 4 years ago on WrestleMania 2000 that we reviewed. Just in 4 years, how much he's progressed from being almost like a novice in there with Jericho and Benoit, and now really being a ring general on the level of a Nettie and a Jericho and a Benoit.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And Kurt at this, I mean, he was always, I think, you know, a lot of it today too, always working through a lot of injuries, and it was after this WrestleMania, he as well got a had more problems with his neck, and he'd actually be kept out of action till the summer. So, I mean, the SmackDown side was just, like, in a total disarray with Lesnar gone, Big Show hurt, Kurt Angle hurt. They were going through a lot of issues at this time, and kind of Kurt just kind of gutted through this match as well. But, yeah, a great match from both guys in this one.
There are two things I remember most about this match. Number one, that point you've said where it looked like it was actually going to be the finish there, like, the crowd, like, I think everyone was convinced that was the end. Because
the frog splash.
Yeah. They went on another probably 4 or 5 minutes after that. Like, the match felt like, you know, like, if it ended there, that would have been a really good match. But, like, they continued it on and made it a great match. Like, one of the best on the card. Probably second best. Maybe third best.
Yeah, I thought they did a really great job.
Second best, if not, you know, you can argue that it was the best if you wanted. But, yeah, probably second.
The second thing I remember about this match, John, if you remember, Paul was sitting next, I think you were in the middle, Paul was sitting next to you, and I was on the end. I was sitting next to a very large black man who I didn't want to say anything to after he did this, but I think he was a very big Eddie Guerrero fan.
Oh.
Because when Eddie won, he spilled his beer all over my bag.
Oh, no.
And if you remember, we didn't have a hotel room.
Oh, shit. Yeah, yeah.
So my bags just, like, and everything I took with me smelled like beer. All the souvenirs and stuff that I had got all smelled like beer. And not to mention our train ride back, because we left in the morning on the train. I was trying to use my bag as a pillow, and I couldn't because everything just reeked of, like 12-hour-old beer.
Oh, because of this asshole.
Because of this asshole who liked Eddie Guerrero.
And then it was really because of Eddie Guerrero.
Yeah.
Eddie Guerrero ruined your trip home.
Yeah. That's right. Thanks, Eddie.
Anyway, video airs for the next match, which Jim Ross calls the match made in hell, with the return of The Undertaker as the Dead Man. And this began all the way back at Survivor Series, where he was buried alive after a match with Vince McMahon where Kane buried him. And this was kind of the death of the American Badass Undertaker and the return of the Dead Man. And Kane cutting promos saying that Taker, he was no longer a monster, but a fraud with a new gimmick. And now we fast forward to today, way where Kane says, I was no longer a monster. I was humanized by Randy Orton.
Yeah. Anyway, everything old is new.
So they go to the Royal Rumble, where Kane's in the Royal Rumble, and The Undertaker's gong hits, and everyone goes nuts, and this signaled his return. And no one had seen The Undertaker since the Survivor Series. And Kane makes his entrance, and then the lights go out, and we get the Paul Bearer yelling, oh, yes. And Paul Bearer makes his return as well here with the Druids. And everyone's going nuts for this and Undertaker's return.
I know a lot of people maybe paid just to see this entrance. What were your thoughts, Brad, on the American Badass character? Were you a fan of that?
You know what? Like, he was the Undertaker. Like, I grew up with him being the Dead Man. And, I mean, he started off in that cheesy sort of, like, he wore kind of, like, purple and black. And, like,
a cartoonish grave digger type of guy.
Kind of like a lot of their characters. Yeah. Like, very, like, cartoony. Yeah. And then they turned him into, I mean, they had a couple questionable things that they did with him during the
Ministry of Darkness.
Yeah, during that whole phase. But I enjoyed that character. And then when he came in and he was the biker, I mean, I guess it was, you know, they had to do something with him because you can't just keep him like that forever.
Yeah.
Right? But, I was pumped like hell to see this entrance. I was pumped like hell to see this match because, I mean, there's a big history between Kane and Undertaker, but also, like, he's very, very enjoyable as the Dead Man. Yeah. I know a lot of people are underwhelmed that he still looked like the biker, like, with longer hair, but I thought it was great. Like, as soon as you saw, like, Paul Bearer come out, like I was, like, you know, back to when I was 15 or 16, like, watching it again.
And you're right. I think we heard a lot of criticism over him not appearing like his, you know, Ministry of Darkness era look. But in hindsight, I think it was a good update on... It was a good combination between a realistic character like that American Badass character and still retaining elements of the Dead Man thing, including the entrance, including you know, the sitting up and all that stuff. I mean, you don't want to be like Kane, you know, in 2012. You know what I mean? You don't want to be a cartoonish character at this point. So I think it was a happy update.
Yeah, and you know, you can't argue this crowd. I couldn't believe this late in the show just how hot they were here for The Undertaker. And that was one of the major things pushed for this show, was the return of The Undertaker. And it had been enough years since they'd seen this Dead Man character. I think a lot of people were intrigued to see this return. And Paul Bearer being thrown in there, I think, was a nice little added bonus for people.
Sure.
Because that wasn't advertised ahead of time. You just knew The Undertaker was coming back. So the match begins. It was great. Kane is just yelling at him, if you could hear this. You're not real. I love Kane. There will always be a soft spot for Kane in my heart. They fight to the floor. Kane is thrown into the apron. Kane goes to counter a powerbomb attempt by The Undertaker, and he goes to kind of drop Taker onto the top rope neck first, but nearly misses here, almost kills the Dead Man here. And then there is a mount by Kane, and then Undertaker sweeps him.
Yeah, this was definitely showing the MMA influence of The Undertaker, and I think it was largely lost on this audience.
He was the Dead Man with MMA gloves.
Yeah.
Kane goes, he stops Undertaker from doing the old school and pulls him off the ropes, goes for a choke slam. Taker also grabs his throat, but it's Taker who ends up taking the choke slam. But then he sits up from it. He choke slams Kane, signals for the tombstone, hits it, big pop, and he pins him. 7 minutes and 47 seconds. And some might argue that, you know, what a big return here, and it was just such a short match. I thought this was booked fine. I didn't need to see these guys any longer than 8 minutes max. You got the entrance. I think the entrance was the highlight of this.
Yeah.
And, you know, I didn't think these guys were going to put on a classic clinic in there, but this was, I think, all people wanted to see was, you know, just the character itself. You sent them home happy with the win, the tombstone. I was fine with this.
Mm-hmm. So I thought it was enjoyable. Like, it was perfectly timed. Like, it was entertaining. Any longer and it would have got stale in points. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you got to see the return of, like, how people want to see The Undertaker.
You got to see this brand. You know, this brand is really the drawing card. And it is perhaps the most well-protected gimmick in pro wrestling.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And if I was going to point to you, Brad, to check out anything, it's that, you know, when you got out of it, it was, you know, when Undertaker was paired with guys at WrestleMania, like, you know, Kane here, or what would some other names be from that, you know, just, you know, Big Boss Man at WrestleMania, and guys like that. It was after this period when the streak really took off as its own built-in storyline every year at WrestleMania, where his matches at WrestleMania in future years with Batista, the two with Shawn Michaels, Triple H last year. I mean, just phenomenal matches that, you know, has now put The Undertaker. To me, The Undertaker is one of the key draws now every year for WrestleMania.
Oh,
it's an instant storyline. It's just the streak and these phenomenal matches he's put on the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go to the main event of this 4.5-hour show. And we have a video for the main event. And it led to, this match was set up after Hunter and Sean went to a draw at the Rumble, where both did a ton of blood here. And then Benoit would win the Rumble, jumps to Raw, and Shawn Michaels would work his way into the match after he super kicked Benoit during the contract signing and signed his name to the contract, which I'm not a lawyer, but I don't think this is how this works in the real world. I attack a man and sign his contract.
I mean, if it were this easy, I think there'd be more three-way title matches or four-way. Like, just everyone sign here.
There would be a lot more chaos in the real world if this was life. I'd probably own your house if I snuck in there the moment you signed that lease.
I signed the mortgage because I killed the owner.
You'd have to super kick me first.
Yes.
So they make it into a triple threat, and then this became a montage for the song Step Up by Drowning Pool. And they go into the arena, and this was interesting because Howard Finkel makes the announcement, our next match is a three-way for the world title. And you could hear crickets during this announcement. There was no reaction to the announcement of your main event of WrestleMania.
Yeah, but it's the announcement.
Oh, you should be... I would think there would have been a big reaction. This is the match that is going to cap off the show.
You have to keep in mind, people were just cheering for 15 minutes straight at The Undertaker.
Yeah.
So they're tired. And they've been there for four
hours.
Well,
they were not tired during this match because this crowd was awesome during the actual match here. Triple H, Shawn Michaels, and Benoit for the world title. And there was a Chris Benoit chant at the start of the match. And Benoit and Michaels would fight over who gets Hunter first, with both throwing the other aside as they'd go after Hunter. Michaels would baseball slide both men and then hit a moonsault to the floor onto both men. And the crowd was pretty much invested right from the start of this match. So much great stuff throughout here. Benoit hit his three German suplexes to Hunter. Hunter and Michaels would work in the ring after hitting a DDT to Michaels, and then he was sent to the floor. And it was kind of your typical WWE three-way, where two guys would work together while another one would be out on the floor, and then they kind of exchange, do a lot of near falls. Michaels and Hunter were in the ring, and Michaels hit his top rope elbow drop and then hit a super kick to Hunter. But Benoit pulls Hunter out of the ring to avoid a pinfall. Michaels then gets catapulted into the post, and this is when he gets busted open, and he was flowing here. Mm-hmm. I mean, what a blade job here. I mean, this guy was covered in blood, which is something they do not allow anymore. No blood in wrestling.
No blood anymore?
No, unfortunately. Hmm. But I thought the blood added a lot to this.
Yeah. Yeah, it did.
There was a spot where Benoit went for the crossface on Michaels, and the blood is just dripping all over Benoit's arm.
How about fake blood? Will they allow that?
Yeah, that'd look lame.
Yeah.
What would be the difference between real and fake blood? It's still the same.
Yeah, it's a prop.
Image.
One is a prop. The other is actual doing actual bodily harm.
Yeah, but it's still conveying. That's like, well...
What, and hitting a guy in the head with a steel chair is not?
Simulated
throwing
blood
somebody
is,
through a table is
well,
not?
It's the blood is the visual they don't want of it. They have no problem with you bleeding buckets and being, you know, lightheaded. The match continues here. They fight to the announce table, and Benoit teases a German suplex on top of the announce table. But Michaels and Hunter end up working together here to vertical suplex Benoit through a table. Crowd goes nuts for that one. Then Michaels is on the floor with a pool of blood coming out of his forehead. Hunter is also busted open here after being thrown into the steps. And then Hunter and Michaels are fighting in the ring. And as Hunter and Michaels are fighting in the ring, the crowd is chanting for Benoit. They could not have asked for a better crowd here. I mean, they were trying to get Benoit over to this level of being a main eventer. And this crowd, they just wanted to see Benoit win here.
It helped that this was New York, and New York people, much like Toronto, are known for having a very smart audience. And really, Chris Benoit, I mean, if you're listening to our show, you probably, you know, were one of the people that realized or felt at the time that this was your representative. This was the representative of the people who like to work rate. And, yeah, this was his big moment.
It really just peaked at the perfect point in the match. Hunter hit a pedigree and to Michaels. Both are selling in the ring, and the crowd is just on the edge of their seats for Benoit to capitalize here on Michaels being taken out by the pedigree. And then Hunter rolled over onto Michaels. Benoit broke the cover. Crowd goes crazy. Then Benoit puts the sharpshooter onto Hunter, but Michaels breaks it with the super kick. And then Michaels sets up for another super kick, but in going to deliver it, Benoit tosses him to the floor, and then he turns around. Hunter goes for the pedigree. Benoit counters into the crossface. Huge reaction here as he applies the crossface, and Hunter is right near the ropes. And then at the final second, Benoit rolls over with Hunter and the crossface intact into the middle of the ring. Hunter taps out 24 minutes and 49 seconds, and the crowd just goes crazy here. Chris Benoit wins the world title. This match was awesome. I thought this was the best match on the show, without question for me. I thought this was great.
I agree. There were so many highlights from it that I remembered like I was watching it live there. Like, Crossface is on Michaels. He's about to tap out, and then Triple H
grabs the arm from outside
the ring, grabs his arm and holds it up and doesn't let him tap. The flying headbutt to break up the count. The, like, Benoit pulling Triple H off Michaels, I think, from outside the ring. Like, all sorts of stuff. The breaking of the announce table was the loudest reaction I heard all night.
And that's amazing, the fact that this crowd had sat through 4 hours of stuff and were perhaps their hottest here for the main event. I mean, it was incredible. These guys all worked a great match. As much as people will nitpick about Triple H, this guy was complete professional here. And the way this was structured was they were going to come back the next month with a rematch of this three-way at Backlash. Mm-hmm. Hunter could have easily made the argument, well, if we're setting up the three-way rematch, Michaels should get pinned and not me, so we have a justification. Yeah. But I think that really Benoit needed to beat the champion here convincingly because he needed that help to get to the main event kind of spotlight. I thought everyone was great in this match, and Hunter was a total pro in this match. And Benoit, you could not have asked for a better crowd here to really position Benoit as this focal point.
When I the moment Hunter taps and Benoit's music hits and the guy rolls over and tears start flowing down his face, like, that is a moment that even watching today, you can't help but feel emotional, because it was real. This guy had just achieved a legitimate career goal. It's like, you know, the equivalent of maybe a businessman suddenly being awarded a promotion to become the president of a company, or I mean, you know what I mean?
Yes, yes.
Like or an academy, or you know, an
academy, totally
academy award.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's a memory that I remember very fondly, and it's a very memory that's still very emotional. But for that same reason, I don't know if it's a memory that I want to relive, because I remember it so fondly. You know what I mean? Because I just feel like this guy had so many great moments in his career, and it's just a real shame things ended up the way they did, because going back and watching these things, it just, you can't watch it and you can't feel the same way. Like, it's
sure,
ruined, you know?
Yeah, it's, you know, watching that live, I just thought it was, you know, here WrestleMania's ending with Chris Benoit, and we should, after the match, of course, Eddie got into the ring, they embraced, and Jim Ross was awesome here in the post-match, and it goes off with the confetti coming down, and here we are, Chris Benoit and Eddie Guerrero closing out WrestleMania in the Madison Square Garden with both titles. It was surreal for any fan of these guys to see it. I was like, wow. And I left the arena. I was like, I will remember this forever, of these two guys in the ring ending WrestleMania, and it's just unfortunate. I mean, obviously with Benoit, I mean, Eddie Guerrero as well, it's you can't go back and watch this and not think, wow, this is like, it means something completely different today than it did in 2004.
Mm-hmm. And it's not even that long ago that it happened. Like this is, what, 8 years after? Like, it's a short time to see both champions at that time are gone now.
Yeah. So it's, you know, and this, unfortunately, it was kind of this whole post-match thing. It was after the pay-per-view went off the air that Nancy and his son and actually his daughter as well, they all get into the ring with him. And that's the footage you saw around the clock when the whole murder-suicide happened, was that match and him in there with his family and stuff. So it's, you know, kind of very surreal to kind of watch now. Yeah. And it's just something that I think two different extremes of what it's meant.
And every wrestling fan is going to have a different opinion on this. Every wrestling fan is going to have a different perspective on rewatching a Chris Benoit match. And I understand every side. I mean, from my own perspective, I was never close. Like, I didn't know the guy. I was never, you know, like hearing Lance Storm's comments last week, I totally understand why he would never be able to watch one of these matches. For me, I'm still able to very much enjoy the match and enjoy the technical ability of the match. I just get distracted, though, you know, like while watching this match, I can't really focus on it because I'm thinking like, man, like, you know, should I be enjoying this? Like, should I feel guilty for watching this right now? It spurs a lot of conversation and a lot of debate, and, you know, it'll continue.
Yeah, it's, you know, something that people will always argue about in terms of Chris Benoit and stuff like that. But, you know, you definitely cannot dismiss a fantastic match. Yes. to end WrestleMania, but that's obviously a kind of a shadow that's kind of cast upon this event, is, you know, that closing scene with Benoit and Eddie. So that was WrestleMania 20. And Brad, we always kind of give a, you know, our ranking out of a 10, what you would give this event. So what would you give this event?
I was very impressed with the show when it was at its highs. It, rewatching it especially, I split it up over 3 days. I watched some of the matches like in the order that they happened, and day two was hard to get through.
Yeah.
Being live at the show, I think that skews my rating a little higher than it should be, just because, I mean, you remember things, like you remember how you felt watching it. And it's different watching it on TV or watching it at a movie theater or watching it again on YouTube than when you're actually there. Because, like, you feel like you're part of it when you're there. So out of 10, I'm going to give this a 9.
9? And how about you, Wei?
For me, I thought it was a great main event. Some very good semi-mains. A very lackluster undercard, yeah. And a card that was definitely dragged down by that Goldberg-Lesnar match. It was a very long show. If this show was trimmed down to maybe like a 3-hour show, I'd maybe give it like a 7.5 to 8. As it stands, I give it a 6.
Even like today, like WrestleMania now, they advertise it as 4 hours. It's usually like in the 3-hour, 45-minute range. Mm-hmm. I think that would have helped this a lot. I mean, it's, to me, it was an hour too long, especially with a lot of the mid-card. I give this a 7.5 out of 10. I mean, the matches that were designed to draw you in delivered. I mean, that main event was...
Except Goldberg and Lesnar.
That's true. That was a fucking horrible match. You're right in that sense. But I thought Guerrero and Angle, I enjoyed more this time versus when I watched it. I was a bit underwhelmed just because I had very high expectations. I thought that would be the best match going into Mania that year. But I have a feeling, not just Angle, but I think Eddie at that time was also kind of, his body was really breaking down at this point. As unfortunate, when he was getting the biggest push of his career, it was like his body was pretty shot. Mm. But that main event was just, it was an incredible main event. So I go 7.5. Now we're going to hear what you guys had to say about it. See if you guys were fans of WrestleMania 20 or if you panned it. And let's start off with, why don't you start us off, Wei?
Atish Singh. I remember being really hyped for this pay-per-view, but ended up being disappointed when it was over. I watched it with a few buddies, and we all felt the same way. This was the return of the lackluster... this was the beginning of WrestleMania's not being special for me anymore. I thought Undertaker's return was lackluster, especially from his outfit, and the hair looked terrible. I loved Trish's heel turn, as she was very stale as a babyface for this show, for the prior few years. Too bad her body was breaking down at this point, and she didn't get a memorable heel run.
I thought it was a great run she had in this year.
The main event was awesome, and it was good to see Benoit finally win the title.
We go to Jonathan Hancock. I attended this WrestleMania with my father, as well as the Hall of Fame the night before. I remember the Goldberg and Lesnar match and the crowd being hostile towards them. The closing moments are tainted now. It was an amazing moment in it, as Eddie is still my favorite to this day. I still think I have a bag of confetti from the closing moments, along with WrestleMania 20 cookies from the Hall of Fame. An enjoyable Mania, but Mania Weekend has gotten a lot better with ROH and such running more activities as access is the same every year, it seems.
Okay, how can you keep cookies for 8 years?
Are they, like, vacuum sealed?
I don't know.
A WrestleMania cookie.
I don't think he's planning on eating them now.
Yeah, but... Okay. I've never heard of that.
One way to find out is to try them.
They made.
No one's ever died from a cookie.
Sure, yeah. It's like having a WrestleMania shampoo.
That's true.
Which John has. Ryan Gilbert. I've been looking forward to the two of you reviewing WrestleMania 20. This pay-per-view is in the annals of wrestling history. Will be looked at a different light by most people since 2007. But I want to remember the ending with Benoit and Guerrero as a moment of two of the best workers in the history of the business getting their moment to shine with the top titles in the WWE. Where years prior they were deemed as vanilla midgets by some at that point in 2004 they were given a real shot at being headliners. That being said, it was an average Mania that I would give the Nate Milton rating of 6 out of 10.
Go on to Brian Camacho. One of the better Manias in my book. I was really hyped for this event. Cena Big Show was a good match to open the show. Evolution versus The Rock and Mick Foley was another good match. It allowed Batista and Randy Orton some time to shine. Lesnar versus Goldberg gets a 0 in my book. Guerrero and Angle was a fantastic match, and the Triple Threat had a very good ending. It sucks that after 8 years, both Eddie and Chris are no longer with us. I'll give the show an 8.5 out of 10.
Let's go to Alexander Rios. In hindsight, watching this WrestleMania actually makes me sad, considering that last image is Eddie Guerrero and Chris Benoit holding their belts in the air. But at the time, I was thrilled for the fact that the WWE was finally willing to take another step and not go back to the same tired motif of putting the belt on Triple H, which was done to death over the previous 2 years. The Brock Lesnar-Goldberg match, even in 2004, was a dream match, even when the creative build to it was terrible. And the match itself, well, what can I say? When your referee got over, even if it was Steve Austin, that is not good. And he says, Undertaker and Kane was complete shit. I'm sorry, guys, but wow, this was not good at all. I may be in the minority here, but I hated the return of Dead Man Undertaker. I had grown fond of the biker because it had shown he had evolved in the Attitude Era to become a more realistic guy, and now he is back as the Dead Man. I got over it in time, but at the time, I was furious.
Navit writes, this Mania is a bittersweet one, obviously with the circumstances that follow it. Going into the event, my interest level was at an all-time low, as I felt the card was full of major filler. I felt the two tag matches and the cruiserweight were all ways to get wrestlers a Mania payday, which brought the card down. I remember being disappointed the most seeing the Foley-Orton program turned into a handicap match, as I felt their match at Backlash would have been best suited for this card. I felt The Rock should have had a one-on-one match with Ric Flair, as the crowd was electric whenever those two were in the ring. Goldberg-Lesnar was really forgettable, and I felt the Taker return was a letdown, as he looked like the American Badass, but with longer hair. I'll always remember Ultimo Dragon's botched entrance, which basically ruined his WWE career, and Jericho Christian match being really good, but with little crowd heat. The only positive that stands out now regarding this event is the rise of John Cena. Main event was awesome, but it definitely can't be enjoyed as much today due to darkness that surrounds it. The very ending sequence with Benoit Guerrero was definitely a moment that WWE had good intentions with, but unfortunately is something they as well as others would like to forget. Overall, a lackluster WrestleMania.
Mike Still, this show really stands out as the last
in a streak of great WrestleManias from 17 to 20. Although bigger venues have become the new tradition, there's something special about MSG, and you could feel that coming from most of the performers on this card. Even at the time, Cena's match opening the show felt like it would be historically significant. Strange that a feat of strength that would put Hogan's Mania 3 slam to shame would open up the 20th anniversary of the show, 20th edition of the show. The atmosphere, good booking, and deep roster made the poor matches okay, and the good matches great. There are very few Mania cards built around top work rate in the main events, but Guerrero, Angle, and the Triple Threat did not disappoint as excellent contests. The drama was there for the Rock and Sock match, and the Jericho-Christian match culminated a fantastic storyline that had been built properly for no less than 5 months and had a fantastic heel turn as the cherry on top.
Josh Moores. I remember going to the theaters for this one with my wrestling friend, who became disinterested, much like your friends, John, and we were so excited for this one. I wanted to see Benoit win the title so badly, but I had doubts the entire time, from HBK being in the match to Triple H's politics. The entire theater clapped and stood up for that last moment of Hunter tapping out. But the rest of the card I remember being pretty good. Even Lesnar-Goldberg was fun, mostly because you saw that they didn't care they were getting booed. They ran with it. Overall, it was fun to watch then, and still good to watch now.
Okay, Lawrence Labibi. This was the last WrestleMania, which for me had everything. Two outstanding world title matches featuring the best workers on either brand at the time, something we haven't seen since. Strength and depth in the two tag team divisions, the conclusion of the excellent Jericho-Christian feud, emphasis on the cruiserweight division, the awesome Evolution, Rock and Sock match, and a strong brand identity between Raw and SmackDown. Some disappointments for me were Goldberg-Lesnar, obviously, and The Undertaker's return. We had expected a real change in his look and style, similar to the 90s look, but instead we got Biker Taker with slightly longer hair. Although it may have a completely different meaning now, at the time seeing Eddie and Benoit close the show in the ring with the two titles was one of my happiest moments ever as a wrestling fan.
I'm glad I proofread this next one, because I would have laughed, and I still might. Phil Markham writes, I remember this being one of the last Manias we got in the UK for free before Sky made us start to pay. It was also the next day I was rushed to the hospital with IBS. The matches were of good standard and also liking John Cena at the time. That has certainly changed. Rock and Sock versus Evolution and a good Lesnar versus Goldberg serious letdown. Goldberg taking Stunner looked terrible. Main event was top-notch, and final scenes with Benoit and Eddie was joy to see how many times have changed. 7 out of 10. Great show, guys. I hope he recovered
from this. The extent of the feedback we get. We get a lot of it, too, so I'm sorry for skipping a bunch of you guys, but a lot of feedback for this show. Let's go to Jay Hunter. I'm really glad you guys are reviewing WrestleMania 20 because I feel this pay-per-view gets unwarranted praise thanks to the stellar main event. 8 years ago, I was disappointed, and I still am. Angle and Eddie in Evolution's match disappointed relative to its potential. Wish it was just Rock and Orton in a singles legend killer match instead. Who booked Goldberg and Lesnar? It seemed like they expected a Rock Hogan WrestleMania 18 crowd response judging by their opening spots. The knowledgeable NYC crowd made and broke this match. Vince's crowd-pandering promo was curiously placed straight afterwards, basically saying, please don't turn on this pay-per-view. Turn on this pay-per-view. Okay. High points of the show were Undertaker's return. I got chills hearing Paul Bearer's, ooh, yes, and the fantastic main event.
Stephen Gooderidge, I was lucky enough to travel to New York from London for this event and was even lucky enough to have third-row ringside seats. These were just off to the side on the same as the hard TV camera, so I thought actually appearing live on TV would be unlikely, which was upsetting to my then 22-year-old self. This, however, was all to change as Jesse Ventura approached Donald Trump to interview him some way through the pay-per-view with me and my sign, the imaginative Steve, and an arrow pointing down on one side, and the more emotional/embarrassing Brett, still my hero, on the other, in clear view throughout said segment. I always wondered at the time whether Brett was watching and whether he appreciated the thought. I'm sure lots of others have mentioned Eddie and Benoit and various thoughts, and it's difficult for the whole night not to be somehow marred. But for me, I just try and remember the positive of seeing a WrestleMania in the hallowed halls of MSG and having a great time in the process.
David Doofenberg. This was definitely interesting to watch again. Obviously sad to think of what happened with Benoit and Eddie. The reaction the fans gave Brock and Goldberg was just crazy, considering how much people wanted to see that match. Obviously, the fans knew the two were done and gave them zero chance to perform. It's crazy thinking after Cena beat Big Show that 8 years later, the Dream match would be happening with him against The Rock. And once again, that rap gimmick does not stand the test of time at all. The main event, I think, is one of the top main events for WrestleMania. I was never so invested into a wrestler like I was with Benoit at the time. I remember my friends and I yelling, "Tap, damn it, tap," when Benoit slapped on the crossface. With all the useless filler on the show, it still gets an 8 out of 10. Also, I gotta say that Kane's entrance was the best that he ever had. The image of the city burning was just an awesome visual.
We go to Jason Perez. With WrestleMania 29 being in New York, New Jersey next year, it's doubtful that 30 will be at Madison Square Garden. I agree that all Manias should be in big stadiums, but I like the tradition of being in MSG every 10 years. As for Mania 20, going in, I was really hyped for Goldberg and Lesnar, and the match they put on was a snore fest. Angle and Guerrero was great, Jericho and Christian was good, and the handicap match was exciting. I'd like to see Rock versus Orton someday. I think it would be a way better match than Cena and Rock. The main event was good at the time. I was a Triple H fan, but I was happy for Benoit when he won. Is it me, or did you guys think the white boots looked weird on Triple H? Overall, I give this Mania 7.5 out of 10, and I will be attending WrestleMania this year.
Brian Lindbergh, only one word can sum up such a monumental event. Disappointing. The only thing I can recall about this event without looking it up is the Lesnar-Goldberg debacle. The match was so bad that I have a conspiracy theory that both guys met before to discuss the match. I have a feeling their conversation went like this. "Hey Brock, look, we have the opportunity to do something memorable here, but instead, let's piss a bunch of people off." "Sounds good to me, Bill. Any ideas?" "Yeah, I've been watching a lot of this new MMA stuff, like the UFC recently. Are you a fan?" "Yeah, it seems kind of exciting." "Well, I've watched it like twice, and I think I can do some of it." "Yeah, and you telling me about it makes me think I could do it too. But will this disappoint the fans? They want us to destroy each other, so yeah, I think this will work." I lost a lot of respect for both guys as a direct result of this match, and couldn't get behind Brock in MMA. But this wasn't the only match that underdelivered. I thought the undercard was largely overbooked and boring. The Big Show Cena finish made both guys look weak. Big Show was bumping for everyone at this time, including Ray, and Cena couldn't win without cheating. The Taker Kane match was nothing compared to their previous Mania matches, and the Rock and Sock match was boring and predictable. The Christian Jericho match was excellent, and I had hopes that Christian is finally going to be treated like a main eventer. Still waiting. The Angle Guerrero match was superb. I expected nothing less. And the main event and final visual of the pay-per-view was the perfect happy ending that we fans seldom get. Too bad it never happened.
Shane writes, "I really enjoyed the pay-per-view at a time, especially because I was a major Benoit mark, which kind of explains why the event doesn't hold the same magic looking back. I did rewatch the main event. The fact of the matter is, I used to enjoy every single Benoit match for the work rate, and now anytime I attempt to rewatch any of his matches, I get no enjoyment from watching them. The hardest part of rewatching them is knowing that his stiff style and top rope headbutts obviously contributed to his multiple concussions and degenerative brain condition. I wanted to give Pollock a hard time about his Benoit stance until I realized at least John watches his matches, and I can't even do that." Well, I'm sure a lot of people feel about that. It's very awkward to watch. Be like, I don't know what it would be like.
I just want, Paul Greinke writes, "I just want wrestling fans to remember the Goldberg-Lesnar match every time they want to mark out over a possible Lesnar return. I understand that he wanted to do other things with his life, but the two of them standing there pulling faces at each other was disrespectful to every worker in the back who worked their ass off to get the Mania, especially after the intense build that they got to their match."
Nate Milton, "WrestleMania 20 was always one of my favorite shows from an often overlooked period in WWE's history. It was a few years after the debacle of the invasion angle, but still a bit before the rise of current stars like Cena and Orton to main event status. You also had a lot of former WCW stars on the roster, but until WrestleMania 20, they always seemed like an afterthought. This show changed that. Sure, there was a lot of filler on the show, but there was also a lot to like on the card. The Cruiserweight Open Challenge, Jericho Christian, and a solid match with Molly and Victoria were nice table setters for two great matches. Eddie versus Angle was awesome, and the Triple Threat is honestly one of the best WWE matches that I've ever seen. It's a shame Benoit's actions have put a cloud on this event, but that doesn't change the fact that it was one of the best WrestleManias in recent memory. I give this show a bald Molly Holly approved 8 out of 10.
Eric Creamer. I really enjoyed this Mania. Without getting too long-winded, I would like to commend John Cena and the WWE. It is truly great to see a Cena who gives a damn about the match that he is in. Whoever laid out the match between Cena and the Big Show knew just how to get Cena over perfectly. I would also highly recommend the DVD to anyone out there if you're a fan of special features. 4-star show in my book. 4-star out of 5, I hope. Or out of 4, even.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
And our final piece of feedback, and thank you to everyone who left your feedback here, David Rodriguez. Hey guys, this is my first time leaving feedback, but I'm a long-time listener and a huge, huge, huge weight ting mark. Way is the fucking man. I feel Way is more over in the internet wrestling community than John Cena. Anyways, WrestleMania 20 was a great show, from the opening match to the closing one. I thought the show was put together very well. Cena was booked awesome, and his victory really helped a fresh face at the time get over. Did anyone else find it weird to hear the Let's Go Cena chants without the Cena Sucks Smarks chanting too? I was shocked to see that there were 2 4-way tag matches for both belts on the show. When was the last time WWE had 8 active tag teams on the roster? Okay, we'll skip through this because we are running late here on time. I can remember watching live with the main event and being on the edge of my seat screaming tap, tap, tap for what seemed like 10 minutes. The closing image of Benoit and Eddie together celebrating brought tears to my eyes. So sad that they are both gone. Overall, a great show, and I'm glad you chose this one to review. Keep up the reviews, and please remember that Wei Ting is the fucking man. Screw Zack Ryder. Wei Ting is the wrestling's true internet champion. Pollock, you are okay too. Spelled my name wrong. But that's okay. Wei Ting, you're a very popular man amongst these people.
Well, thank you.
You're going to be mobbed in Miami.
Oh,
just
yeah.
Mobbed.
I'll be huge. I should be fighting The Rock, shouldn't I? Okay, well, thank you all. But no, we didn't choose this show. You guys did. We put up a poll up there, and we got a lot of demand for this show. So I hope you guys are happy with the result.
That's true. Now, next week, Wei, Mania Month is over. So what are we going to review?
Mania month is over, but we'll still be traveling back from Miami at the time. And so I decided there's been a lot of talk about FCW, the Florida Championship Wrestling, which is the developmental territory for the WWE. As you know, there were a lot of rumors that they're being shut down, but that ended up being false. But I just got to thinking, I've never seen this show. I hear so much about it. I know Chris Hero is down there now, Tyler Black, Claudio Castagnoli. What's up with them? Let's watch some Florida Championship Wrestling.
That's going to wrap us up, everyone. Brad's going to quickly think of a song here for us to go out with. And in the meantime, everybody, we're going to be back later this week with many more shows because we've got Review and Impact coming up on early Friday morning. And then me and Wei are off to Miami for WrestleMania weekend, where, providing our wireless works out, we'll have a number of shows down from Miami.
Yeah, we'll be fine. You guys just tune into Outlaw Radio, and you'll
Follow us, Outlaw Radio, on Twitter. We'll be keeping you updated throughout our trip, and of course, liveaudiowrestling.com and reviewaway.com. And Brad, what would you like to hear to send us off here?
As much as we hated the match, I like his theme music, so let's hear some Goldberg theme.
The old Goldberg theme, or the WWE version?
The old Goldberg theme.
All right, here we go. Some Goldberg taking us out. We'll chat with you guys soon. We'll be right back.
New car.
Holy shit. Dude, I'm not fucking around.
Try again.
Won a fucking donut.
Nice.
Does anyone want a free donut?
No, just keep it.
I'm gonna throw it out, Wei, if you don't want a free donut.
Wei wants a donut.
I don't want the donut, but I feel like if you win something,
here,
you
rip
should...
it off. I'll take a donut.
So. Yeah, you should make use of it.
Yeah.
Don't throw away your good luck that way.
Yeah, that's right.
Only the there was one.
Because if you throw it away, it's basically like you lost.
Yeah.
You should get that donut and throw the donut away.
No. I'm not a fan of wasting.